Warning will be for the threat of tornadoes all through the morning and into this afternoon across Louisiana, into southern Mississippi and Alabama as well.
That's NBC meteorologist Dylan Dreyer. Meanwhile, the Lake Tahoe area was the scene of an avalanche after 3 feet of snow hit the region. A snowboarder was killed. Well, forget about the chance your taxes will go up if the White House and Congress fail to get together to avoid the so-called fiscal cliff. Higher taxes are a certainty on January 1st. That's due to the new health care law going into effect. This is NBC News Radio. A community near Rochester, New York is mourning the loss of two firefighters today.
Investigators in Webster, New York say four firefighters responded to reports of a house and car on fire around 5:30 Monday morning.
NBC's Chris Poloni says what they didn't know is that the fires were set by a gunman waiting to ambush them.
One of the men was able to retreat to safety after being shot. A SWAT team in an armored vehicle retrieved the other three, but by then, firefighter Tomas Kutufka and volunteer Mike Ciparini were dead.
The gunman later turned the weapon on himself. Investigators have not determined a motive. Air travelers got a scare as fire crews sprayed foam onto a U.S. Airways passenger jet. It's after a small fire broke out. It happened at the Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport last night. The plane was bound for Vancouver. Some Netflix customers found their Christmas Eve movie streaming a little choppy. That's due to an outage at Amazon's North Virginia data centers. Netflix says it's working to fix the problem. I'm Tom Graham, NBC News Radio.
Imagine your favorite cigarette. Now, imagine it without the smoke and cigarette smell. Like introducing the Enjoy King, the first electronic cigarette with the look, feel, and flavor of the real thing. Finally, smokers have a real alternative. New Enjoy King. Cigarettes, you've met your match. Available at participating 7-Eleven and Sheets stores. Not for sale to minors. Contains nicotine, which is addictive. Find out more at Enjoy.com.
A Weather Channel Wednesday night event. Where there is open water, there is danger.
Lifeguard dispatch, I'm on scene.
Two teams, two coasts, one mission. Save your life. From the rocky shores of Southern California.
He is unconscious, but she is breathing.
To the beaches of South Florida.
Drug runners, shipwrecks, we see it all here.
They risk it all for the rescue.
Prayer for the worst, hope for the best.
A Wednesday night original series event. Lifeguard Southern California at 8 Eastern. Coast Guard Florida at 9. Premiering Wednesday, January 23rd. Only on the Weather Channel.
A leadership coach says we could all do better in the workplace by getting more emotional, but not in the way you're probably thinking.
If they are collaborative and encourage one another, help one another succeed, they're having fun and working hard. That makes a huge difference.
John Kaiser is talking about emotional intelligence. It's based on building trusting relationships. Kaiser says the skills involved are self-awareness, social awareness, self-management, and relationship management.
People want to feel appreciated. They want to feel that their ideas matter and that they are heard.
He pushes his clients to communicate more with their employees.
You have to find the time to do it. You can pick up your phone when you're in a taxi cab. You can call people when you're sitting in an airport waiting for a plane or from your hotel room. A short conversation is better than no conversation.
John Kaiser is the founder and principal of Common Sense Leadership. I'm Elisa Parenti from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
I'm Dan Kelly, owner of GoTime Fitness. I'm always trying to stay top of mind with my customers, and Constant Contact has the tools to help me do that. They make it so easy. So when my daughters started a business of their own, Constant Contact was the best advice I could give them.
Dad, we're nine. It's a lemonade stand.
Never too early to start.
From deals to events, social to email, Constant Contact can help you grow your business. Find the solution that's right for you at ConstantContact.com.
Hey, Fred, where you at?
Oh, hi, Eddie. Fred's inside doing the breakfast dishes for me.
Really? How'd you manage that?
I told him I'd take the car and get it serviced. Say, you got a recommendation where to go?
Parts Plus Car Care Center. Good people, good service. I've told Fred, but he never listens.
Well, I'm listening. Just tell me how to get there.
Okay, but don't tell Fred you heard it from me.
Oh, I'll just tell him. I heard about him on the radio. Now, about those directions.
For the location nearest you, go to PartsPlus.com.
Tina and her husband owed big money to the IRS.
We owed over $50,000.
They were frightened out of their wits.
Oh, my gosh, it was horrible. I thought we were going to lose everything. I thought we're going to jail.
Then it happened. Tina found the expert help she and her husband so desperately needed.
These guys were awesome to work with. They stopped IRS from putting liens on our homes and our cars, and they stopped them from freezing our bank accounts. They kept the IRS off our backs. We really can't thank them enough.
The team of professionals at Authority Tax Services help Tina and her husband, and they can help you. Authority Tax Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau.
We saved a whole lot of money.
You too may qualify to get up to 85% or more off your tax liability or for other special programs. So take Tina's advice.
Anybody in trouble with the IRS, give them a call. These are the guys to help you.
If you owe more than $10,000, call Authority Tax Services now at 800-274-9776. Call now for your free no-obligation consultation. 800-274-9776. 800-274-9776.
The comments, ideas, and opinions expressed in the following program are those of the show participants only. Nothing stated in this program reflects the ideas, opinions, or beliefs of this radio station and or Clear Channel Radio.
I've been looking forward to this interview for quite a long time now. There's a variety of reasons. Most of you know that I have a vested interest in the 11th Congressional District. I ran for Congress there in 2006, although I did well, didn't do well enough, didn't beat Thad McCotter. I have to wear that every day, folks. I'm sorry, but I do. We have a situation now where Thad McCotter finds himself in legal trouble, at least his staff did, and where his culpability begins and ends can be something we can debate at another time. But he has left the 11th Congressional District without representation. Now we have a constitution in the state of Michigan that mandates we do things a certain way. One of them is we needed to replace him by going to a ballot election. The next one would have been the one coming up on November 6th, so that we don't complicate this anything any more than we have to. There is somebody that is running to replace Thad McCotter for the remainder of his term. Let's leave it there for now. We'll talk about Dr. Taj later. But for right now, there is a man who I respect a great deal. He is a consummate activist. He has many years serving the labor movement, has served in an important capacity with the last three presidents, no matter where they were at in the hierarchy of the UAW over the course of his lifetime, is an amazing, truly an amazing blue-collar success story who understands better than most the challenges that we all face. He is running to replace Thaddeus McCotter on November 6th for the duration of his term. And I speak of the one and only Dave Kirsten. Dave, it is such an honor to have you on the show today.
I appreciate that, Tony. Thanks very much for that glorious intro.
Well, it's all the truth. And again, I'm trying not to overcomplicate this because, man, when you start explaining this, people just start looking at you a little funny because, well, it gets a little weird.
Very weird. Even seasoned political activists get glassy-eyed when you try to explain all the complications in this campaign.
Well, that's why we're just going to leave it where we're at until the very end, and then we'll kind of try to neatly tie this up. Dave, you know, and I think an obvious question. First of all, there's no question that you could be a member of Congress. God knows that you have the intelligence. God knows you have the background. God knows you have the skill set to do this. But why would you step up in this special election, which it is, it's a special election, why would you step up to fill a role that will only last for 8 weeks?
Well, Tony, sometimes I ask myself that same thing. Because it's been a tremendous amount of work. But because what I do for a living, every day we're deep into the people's problems. And the UAW is simply a slice of society. The problems that our members have, everybody that works for a living has. And we're so aware of how important this lame duck session is that's coming up in Congress. There's so many things at stake that to think that this vacated seat would just be handed back over to the same party that's created this unconscionable gridlock that moves nothing, I just felt compelled I had to do something. It's a short term. It's not life-changing for me, but I think the people of the 11th District need a voice in Congress that's going to actually address the problems and try to be a problem solver to move us forward rather than staying stagnant like we've been for the last 2 years because of party and personal politics.
Well, you know, one of the things that's exciting about that, and I'm just going to keep it personal for a moment, one of the things that's exciting about this for me is I actually live in the old 11th, so I'll actually get to vote for you, which I'm excited about.
That's great.
You know, I'm really, really excited about that. I'm moving to the, well, it doesn't matter where I'm moving to, I will be able to vote for you, and I'm very excited about that. But, Dave, we you know, and I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about your opponent, but there is some real danger if he is elected on November 6th, because it may affect another part of that race, which is, of course, the Dr. Taj part, which we'll get to again much later on. People need to understand it's critical that they vote, in depending whether you can vote in just one part or both parts, but it's incredibly critical that you get elected so that we can send the message on November 6th that the 11th Congressional District is ready to fight for all people, because that's really what you got into this for to begin with, to make sure all people have representation.
Without a doubt, Tony, and my opponent and Dr. Taj's opponent is at the far right side of the Republican Party, and I think even mainstream Republicans have difficulty with his views on the world. And if he wins this special election and the following election, which we're working very hard to make not happen, he'll have seniority in Congress over the new freshman and will get greater consideration for committees and a better seat in Congress that will advantage him over any of the freshman Democrats that happen to be coming to Congress.
Now, again, these are critical, critical points. Let me remind people, if you want more information, by the way, on Dave Kirsten, his positions on a variety of issues, you can just go to KirstenForCongress.com. That's F-O-R, Kirsten, K-U-R-S-O-N, for F-O-R, Congress.com. And we'll get that up on the Facebook page if it's not already there. You know, David, as you're talking, I didn't even think about the seniority thing. That in and of itself blows my mind. But I want to remind people that your opponent has deliberately stayed out of the public spotlight. He doesn't talk to the media. He doesn't talk to constituents. He only shows up, and very rarely, to Republican or Tea Party, mostly Tea Party sponsored events. He is more a Ron Paul Republican, more of a libertarian than even what we would call a mainstream Republican, although I don't even know what that means anymore, Dave Kirsten. But at the end of the day, and I never thought I would be able to say this, he's actually more eccentric than Thad McCotter.
I think without a doubt, I'm running against him. Rarely a day goes by that I'm not at one or two or three or four events that are open to all candidates, and I've yet to lay my eyes on him. Even at an event in his hometown in Milford, at a senior center a week or two ago, they had a number of candidates at a meet the candidate party, and he never showed up there. It's amazing that I believe he thinks if he stays out of the spotlight and does his robocalls and his mailings, because he's well funded, from what I understand from the right wing community, that's going to carry the population of Republicans, and I hope that that's wrong.
Well, I hope that that's wrong as well. You know, it's interesting, again, as you know, I ran for Congress in 06, and I understand the challenge. That's why I admire you as much as I do this in the short term. You said something critically compassionate and wonderful, that the lame duck session of Congress will be very important. It will get more important, especially if on November 6th, nationally, we either win back the House or win back a big chunk of seats. Legislation is going to move very quickly, and you're going to have to be prepared to do a lot of studying. Here's the good news, Dave Kirsten. You have been involved in literally hundreds of negotiations, including the bridge loan negotiations that happened that saved the auto industry. Thank you, Mr. President. These are not things that you need to fear, obviously. These are things, of course, that you would excel at.
I agree with you. And again, in my daily life, we have to keep an eye on legislation, because every vote impacts some American, and the UAW is just simply a slice of society. this session of Congress may be the busiest ever because of the gridlock that's been here for the last 3 or 4 years.
Well, you know, and that brings us to some of your positions. I said I didn't want this entire interview to be about your opponent or bashing your opponent. I think he does a good job of taking that on his own. Let's talk about some of the issues that are important to you, Dave, and start wherever you'd like.
Well, job creation by far is my personal interest, and the job creation is there and available today. It just takes people to move to pass those bills. The infrastructure in this country is simply falling apart. The bridges, the transit authorities, roads, dams, the power grid, all of that is in severe need of work. If funding went, which is right now in Congress, to do those jobs, it's estimated that by the time all of that is completed, up to 2 million Americans would be put to work in a very short term. That's the start. That's the beginning of job creation. And then if you go to the incentives that corporations get to offshore jobs, we heard Mitt Romney say the other day that he never got any incentives. Well, when they strip and flip, when Bain Capital stripped and flipped companies and took the profitable operations and sold them off offshore, those operations no longer paid payroll taxes. They no longer paid taxes to the community where they were based. The operating profits went to the country that they relocated to and then was put in foreign banks. So the U.S. didn't reap the benefit of those taxes. And then the personal income earned from those locations by those owners, by the very rich, went to accounts in the Cayman Islands. So those incentives equal about $1.5 trillion if we could close those loopholes.
All right, Dave, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We've got to get to a break. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute. Dave Kirsten, candidate for Congress in the 11th Congressional District. We'll come back, wrap up our interview with Dave, wrap up today, give you a little preview of tomorrow. Don't you go anywhere. The best stuff happens in the last 10 minutes. I'm Tony Trupiano. This is First Shift, and you're listening to 1310 WGTW.
Hey, it's Joe, and I'm just hoping that all the listeners at First Shift have a great holiday season and carry it on to a happy new year.
On 1310 WDTW.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
feed pouring,
drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for,
and much more.
All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan.
Please call 313-962-5020.
Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan.
Your future is waiting for you now.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off, than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
My family found out I was on drugs. They were just terrified.
Everyone that loves her was devastated.
I mean, it got to the point where my mom couldn't even sleep if I wasn't home.
My parents almost got a divorce because of my drug use.
They were constantly bailing me out of trouble and paying off drug dealers and pawn shops and lawyers and hospital bills.
I don't think I'd ever cried as much in my entire life.
There was no time that she didn't worry about what was going on with me, and you could see it on her face.
He did not know how to take control of his life. The drugs had done it.
It was the closest thing to walking death I can imagine.
And I remember my mother saying to me one day, "You're going to die if you don't get help."
I wanted to have my life back and my family back. And that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
First Tip with Tony Trupiano.
I am Tony Trupiano. He is Kevin Moore, president of Teamsters Local 299.
And it just goes to show that boots on the ground and people at the voting polls, no matter if you make them stay 8-9 hours, this is America, and they tried voter suppression to keep people in line for 8-9 hours, elderly people. And you know what? They stood in line.
That's right.
They said, you're not going to steal this election from me. They tried to do everything in their power. Big money tried to do everything in their power. You can bet them 1%er sat home and got an absentee ballot and voted. They never waited no line. Them guys wouldn't stand in line for a cup of coffee.
On 1310, WDTW.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
On my guest is Dave Kirsten. Dave, of course, is running for Congress in the 11th Congressional District. He is running to fulfill the remainder of the term of the now disgraced and retired Thaddeus McCotter. The 11th has been without representation since McCotter's fall from grace, if that's what you want to call it. And we are thrilled to have Dave on the show today. Again, if you go to the internet, go to Kirsten, C-U-R-S-O-N-F-O-R, Congress.com, KirstenForCongress.com, and you can get all of the information that you need. Again, Dave will be fulfilling the last of Thad McCotter's term, and it's important that we elect him come November 6th. He, of course, pointed out to us something that I didn't even think about, that it would give his opponent seniority if he, God forbid, were elected to Congress in the other part of this election, which we'll get to in just a few moments. And we don't necessarily, we don't absolutely want that to happen. Dave, thanks for staying with us.
Anytime, Tony.
You know, as you kind of work your way through the district, I know you've been knocking doors. I know you've been at meetings because we've been at one together, and so I know you're doing that. Are you finding that at least the faithful, the Democratic faithful, our base, get what's going on, understand the importance? Are, you know, and you know, when you get into a race like this, raising money has got to be difficult because you've got, you know, the Dr. Taj part of the race, and then you're part of the race. Are people getting it, Dave?
Well, the party activists are getting it. It was difficult at first, but I think that they understand. But the average Joe, it's very, very difficult for them to understand. In the old 11th district that I'm running for was redistricted after the 2010 census, and the old 11th district now sits in three new redistricted districts. So, actually, I'm on the ballot with three different congressional candidates from the Democratic Party. So, I can't use lawn signs, and I'll give an example where I live in Belleville. If I put a lawn sign, Kirsten for Congress, in my front yard, my neighbors think I'm running against John Dingell, because Belleville's now in the new 12th district. If I put that sign in Wayne or Westland, people think I'm running against John Conyers because it's been redistricted into the 13th. And, of course, if I put it in Canton or Novi, people think that I'm running against Dr. Taj, the average Joe. So it's a very difficult campaign, and hopefully the boots on the ground and the explaining to people and the literature we're sending out will get the message through that both myself and the Democratic congressman that I'm running with in whatever community you live in, you can vote for both.
Fortunately, the way it will appear on the ballot, and I'm sure you've seen it, I've seen it, is that it's actually very self-explanatory, not nearly as confusing as it sounds. As Dave's articulating this, and he's doing a beautiful job, it's still confusing. I promise, when you see your ballot, it actually is very commonsensical. So don't worry about that, folks. It will make sense to you. My concern is that people understand you have an amazingly positive relationship with Dr. Syed Taj.
Absolutely. He's a great candidate, and anything I can do to help him, I'll be happy to be there with him.
Well, and you have, in fact, been there with him, and I know that you have been helping to get him elected. He's been helping to get you elected. And so I want people to understand, because, again, the confusion thing comes in to play here. And my, I mean, could Fad McCotter have done it any worse than he did, Dave?
No, he couldn't. Even if he had these issues, if he had just resigned a little sooner, it would have saved the taxpayers of Michigan about $650,000 to $1 million in running a special primary to pick a Republican candidate to run in this short term in the special election.
Well, again, the good news, very simply, is that on your ballot, it will make sense. So when you see more than one spot to vote for Congress, just follow it. Just goes back to something, Dave, I've been telling people forever. You can actually print out a sample ballot. You can fill it out, bring it with you. As long as you're not, you know, advertising it and showing people in line, you're fine. When you get into that ballot box, when you go to fill out your ballot, pull out your sample form, have it filled out ahead of time. Don't forget about your nonpartisan stuff. Bing, bang, bong. You're all set. Don't need to worry about anything.
Exactly right, Tony. On the ballot for my election, in whatever part of the old 11th district that you live in, it will say 11th district partial term.
There you go. And that, again, it'll make so much sense. It'll make so much sense. And I'm going to really direct people to our podcast of this interview, Dave, because I think we've done a fairly good job of explaining this in a way that doesn't confuse anybody. So let's just see if we do okay with that. And I would like to get you back on before Election Day. And in fact, maybe we'll get you on Election Day. That might make the most sense. I think we're just going to do candidates all day long that morning so that we can give everybody one last push as we get ready to celebrate some victories. And Dave Kirsten, I really do believe in you. I believe in what you stand for. And I can't thank you enough for doing the work that is beyond difficult. I don't have an adjective to describe it, but thank you for stepping up to this role.
Well, I appreciate that, Tony. And thank you for not only this opportunity, but what you do all the time, not just during the election cycle, but keeping people aware of what's going on in the progressive world out there.
I appreciate that a great deal. My friend, best of luck to you. We'll talk soon. Have a great day, and listen, it'll be over before you know it.
Okay, thanks, Tony.
All right, Dave Kirsten once again, KirstenForCongress.com, and you're going to, again, find all this stuff on the Facebook page. Tony Truppiano wanting to wish all of you the happiest and most joyous of holiday season. Whether you celebrate the Christmas holiday or just celebrate the time of year, know that we here at First Shift care about you and wish you the very best.
Today in the United States, labor is under siege. Unions are being assailed. In states like Wisconsin and Ohio, collective bargaining rights are being stripped away, and so-called right-to-work laws aim to eliminate unions entirely, so companies can pay less or outsource jobs completely. As a result, you're being divided, and there's no one place for you to be heard, no one place to speak, no one place to stand together, until now. Welcome to UnionCircle.com, an online community created specifically for union members, a place where 40 million active and retired union members, their friends, family, and supporters all across North America can be counted. UnionCircle.com provides a forum for members to interact and build a powerful voice. Union members can share their thoughts and opinions. Union locals can post news and announcements. People who run for public office and who stand with the unions can spread their message and rally union members. Because united we stand, united we vote. You'll also find union-friendly businesses that offer Circle members exclusive discounts, promotions, special offers, rewards, and coupons, all to help support America's workforce. And all UnionCircle.com members can create a call to action to make a real difference in their city, their jobs, and their lives. UnionCircle.com is the online community for anyone who believes in restoring the middle class and that the strength of this nation is in its workers. It's a website just for you. Will UnionCircle.com replace Facebook? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's tightly integrated with both Facebook and Twitter. But while Facebook and Twitter connect you to family and friends and LinkedIn to professional contacts, UnionCircle.com is specifically designed to connect you with your fellow union members and to keep you plugged into union activity locally and nationally. It is the perfect site for all union members because America's unions have always known that there is power in numbers and strength in unity. Listen. Be heard. Take action. Now is the time. UnionCircle.com is the place. Get in the circle. UnionCircle.com.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
speed pouring, drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for, and much more.
All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan.
Please call 313-962-5020.
Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan.
Your future is waiting for you now.
Over 140 Rite Aid stores are unionized with over 1,500 United Food and Commercial Workers members working with a union contract in stores all across Michigan. Because they are union members, they have access to higher wages, a company pension, a health care plan for themselves and their family, and UFCW Rite Aid workers proudly serve their communities and at the same time enjoy a living wage and benefit package. Please support our union Rite Aid workers and make sure they know how much we appreciate the work they are doing. To join the UFCW family of drugstores, visit UFCW.org or call 248-585-9671.
My name is Rachel, and I'm 10 years old. I like riding my bike, playing soccer, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. My friends will drink, so I will too.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
My parents won't really know what's going on yet. I mean, I'll do okay in school, but when I drink, I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
Alcohol affects their judgment and their future. So start talking before they start drinking.
My parents won't believe it could happen to me.
For more information on teens and alcohol, and to learn what you can do, visit the web at stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Mommy, sing me to sleep.
Sure, sweetie. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. You're a ball of gas that's very far. 32 light years in the sky. 10 parsecs, which is really high. Helium, carbon, and
hydrogen
fuse to make our starry friend. When it enters supernova stage, it explodes with bursts of rays. And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole. And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole.
Thanks, Mom.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, so it's up to parents to help create a brighter future for them. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Recently on First Shift.
Welcome, Tom in Detroit.
The one gentleman, the rich ultra-billionaire, that, as you called it, wasted $140 million, and it would have been better to give it to the poor. What do you think, where do you think that $140 million went? What happened to it? Did he just burn it? The money is spent on advertising, hotels, anything to do. That money is spent. It put people to work. That money wasn't just, they didn't just burn it.
Oh, so now Sheldon Adelson's a job creator. That's what you're saying.
It sure certainly is.
First Shift with Tony Trivia on 1310 WDTW.
All right. I received a notice in my email a little over a week ago. And the headline was, Republican strength in Congress aids super rich. President's affiliation has no effect. Study investigates the rise of the top 1%. Who wouldn't be interested in that? Well, maybe a lot of people, but not you. You would be very interested in that. So let's talk about it. Joining me now is the co-author of this study that was done. His name is Thomas Volsho. Thomas is an assistant professor of sociology at City University of New York College in Staten Island. And he's with us this morning to talk about this fascinating look at the top 1% and how things have changed, by the way, from going back from 1949 to 2008. And Thomas, I want to thank you for being with us this morning.
Oh, glad to be here.
Really a fascinating study. And I got to tell you, as the 1%, Thomas, has kind of come into focus as a part of our everyday dialogue now, I think it's important that we, you know, investigate in an unbiased way if what we are, and I hate to use the word accusing, but what we are accusing the 1% of being or doing actually has a basis in fact. And indeed, you did find that there is a basis that the rich are getting richer and everybody else, not so much, Thomas.
Right. The change, the rise of the top 1%, if you go back from the end of World War II until the late 1970s, the share of income accrued or however gotten by the top 1%, it was pretty stable. It was around, averaged out about 10 or 11%. But by 2007, they're accruing 23.5, so they've doubled their share of the pie over a 30-year period. So what we did in the study was, why did this happen? We were really interested in this. And we actually started doing this research in, I think it was spring 2010. So it was before Occupy Wall Street, but I think the sentiment was there, the Occupy Wall Street, that movement that arose. So this group, they've just skyrocketed back to a position that they were last at in right on the eve of the Great Depression.
Well, certainly as I worked my way through all this information, there were some things that were really quite remarkable. And I love the way that you set this up, because we are going to be talking in, 0.8% or 0.4%. And of course, as you point out, these numbers might seem negligible, but Thomas Volsho, there could be nothing further from the truth when we're talking about, basically trillions of dollars and billions of dollars and how you cut that up. 0.8% or 0.4% really represents a lot of money.
Right. So if you look in, 2008, there's about $8 trillion in adjusted gross income in our tax returns. And so to get a small percentage of that to increase, your share of that is huge. One of these small percents translates into lots of money. So, for instance, one of the things we found in the study, so we found that, the president's affiliation has no effect. The top 1%, they've gotten richer under Democrat and Republican presidents. They got really rich under Clinton, even richer under George W. Bush, and then, stayed the same or seemed to be getting richer. It takes some time to get the data. The IRS takes 2 years to release their data, so 2010's as late as we have now. President's affiliation didn't really have much effect. There's no pattern there. We thought it was kind of interesting. A lot of people, might assume that, Democratic presidents perhaps are not as helpful to the 1%, but it seems that both at the presidential level, both parties seem to be responding in a positive way to the 1%.
Yeah, but Thomas, that also brings us to an interesting question, and that is, who's president may not matter, but how about our members of Congress? Does it matter who holds the majority in Congress? Does that affect that?
Yes, that's what our main finding was, that when the GOP gets more seats in Congress between the House and the Senate, the super rich does much better. So, for instance, if the GOP were to go from 48% of Congress to 49%, based on the $7.8 trillion in the economy in 2008, that would translate into $6.6 billion going to the top 1%.
Wow, that's just, these are stunning, stunning numbers. Were you, by the way, Thomas Volshow, were you surprised at all by what you, when you concluded this study, by what you discovered?
Yeah, we were somewhat, some of it was interesting, right? We thought, you know, the president should have some kind of, there should be some kind of difference with the president. But then if you go over recent history, like I mentioned earlier, you know, with the rich, they got rich under Clinton and George W. Bush. You know, there's no pattern there. But, I was surprised that the GOP, through Congress, congressional control, could have such an effect. But then if you look at what they do, they pass legislation, but they also, you know, they hold hearings. They decide whether or not to hold hearings on, is there a wave of anti-union activity going on that's against the labor laws of this country? Should we hold hearings on that? The filibuster in the Senate can block lots of legislation. There's a lot of discussion now about how basically the financial markets have evolved so fast with such, they've been fighting regulation, deregulating. A GOP Congress has been, they deregulated the Glass-Steagall Act, which was passed in the Depression to say commercial banking, where people, deposit their money and we make more mortgage loans, and that's going to be separate from these other banks that do, high-risk investment banking and stuff for rich people, investors, then kind of, some sense of gamble, but at least you're not using depositors' money to do that. And so they shut that system down. And I'd say that the power of Wall Street was so intense. You can see it with the Reagan administration. You saw the guy from Merrill Lynch, Donald Regan. He was the Treasury Secretary, so he went from Merrill Lynch to Treasury Secretary. And then under Reagan, you did see the beginnings of this powerful Wall Street. And then in under Clinton, you really saw it. Clinton campaigned on his 92 campaign was putting people first, Clinton and Gore in 92, and they said that they were going to invest in infrastructure, jobs, education, middle class tax cut, and all that seems to have been swept under the rug once Clinton got into office. I mean, there's some people who say when Alan Greenspan met with him, Alan Greenspan was the Federal Reserve Bank chair, that he sort of laid down a threat in Little Rock, this was before he even took office, that if he didn't talk about deficit slashing, that Greenspan would raise interest rates and put Clinton out of office by the 96 election. I mean, there's some speculation on that. But Congress has simply allowed lots of deregulation of financial markets, and it's been very intense since the 1980s. So from the Great Depression until the late 70s, financial markets, there was lots of regulation of them, lots of oversight by the government. But all that seems to have fallen apart starting in the 1980s.
Well, and certainly, Thomas, before we go to the break here, I'm hoping you can stay with us. I have lots more to talk to you about.
Sure.
I appreciate it. Certainly as we take a look at that, one of the things that this study looks at is legislatively what Republicans do, what Democrats do. Certainly Democrats are more socially conscious. They are more infrastructure-minded. They're more public service-minded than Republicans by and large. I mean, I'm overgeneralizing to a degree, but not to a large degree. I mean, Democrats are more willing to invest in the middle class. They're more willing to redistribute, if you will. And you point that out here. And so why don't we start there on the other side of this break, Thomas? And then I want to talk about the impact on unions, because that facet of this is absolutely, absolutely mind-boggling. And when people hear these numbers, Thomas Volshow, they will be blown away. All right, a quick break here. My guest again, Thomas Volshow. He is the assistant professor of and assistant professor of sociology at the City University of New York College of Staten Island. The report that we're speaking of appears in the I'll find it on the other side. I had it here and I lost it, but I'll get to that on the other side. Everybody stay where they're at. We're going to continue with First Shift right after this.
This is Kevin from First Shift wishing all of our listeners a safe and happy holiday season.
On 1310 WDTW.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
speed pouring, drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for, and much more.
All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan.
Please call 313-962-5020.
Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan.
Your future is waiting for you now.
First Shift with Tony Triano.
Let me turn my attention now to Special Assistant to President Al Garrett at AFSCME Council 25, Ned McNeil.
We specifically signed this agreement on February the 1st of this year, and we ratified this agreement in March. They could have put this agreement in place that the unions had did, which would have annually saved the city $180.2 million. You wouldn't be in this game that they're playing, that they're just playing this game with people's lives and with the citizens of the city of Detroit.
On 1310 WDTW.
He wakes up, sniffs around, looks for great deals all over town. Amazing what he digs up. His fun-loving pup. Sweet, sweet Jack. SweetJack.com.
This is Ron Scott. We're moving to 1130 AM WDFN. Join us on Sunday, January 6th, and each Sunday at 10 AM. We will keep fighting for justice on 1130 AM WDFN.
The following letter was written by Technical Sergeant Jerry G., U.S. Air Force.
I've just finished reading over some of the correspondence you've sent us over here. And for an old dog like me, I was choked up. Thanks to each and every one of you. You're the reason why I have proudly put on the uniform of the American forces, to serve folks like you, those we all love and honor, and those who do not have what we have, but who are willing to stand next to us and fight for their own freedom as well. So the next time you see one of my brothers or sisters in arms, shake their hands or pat them on the back. Tell them you support them. This is what we cherish more than anything.
Your support may be the most important thing our troops can carry with them. But don't take our word for it. Take theirs. To show your support, visit americasupportsyou.mil. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Defense and the Ad Council.
He would come home after a hard day and just start in on me, you know, like, hey, how's your day? How was school? What you got going on? I mean, it gave me the chills.
The time I got this wicked, cool scorpion tattoo on my shoulder, not even the whole arm, just the shoulder, and he grounded me for 2 weeks. 2 weeks! And oh yeah.
Don't worry. They'll appreciate it. Eventually. A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council. Have you been a dad today? For more information, visit fatherhood.org.
Today in the United States, labor is under siege. Unions are being assailed. In states like Wisconsin and Ohio, collective bargaining rights are being stripped away, and so-called right-to-work laws aim to eliminate unions entirely so companies can pay less or outsource jobs completely. As a result, you're being divided, and there's no one place for you to be heard, no one place to speak, no one place to stand together, until now. Welcome to UnionCircle.com, an online community created specifically for union members, a place where 40 million active and retired union members, their friends, family, and supporters all across North America can be counted. UnionCircle.com provides a forum for members to interact and build a powerful voice. Union members can share their thoughts and opinions. Union locals can post news and announcements. People who run for public office and who stand with the unions can spread their message and rally union members. Because united we stand, united we vote. You'll also find union-friendly businesses that offer Circle members exclusive discounts, promotions, special offers, rewards, and coupons, all to help support America's workforce. And all UnionCircle.com members can create a call to action to make a real difference in their city, their jobs, and their lives. UnionCircle.com is the online community for anyone who believes in restoring the middle class and that the strength of this nation is in its workers. It's a website just for you. Will UnionCircle.com replace Facebook? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's tightly integrated with both Facebook and Twitter. But while Facebook and Twitter connect you to family and friends and LinkedIn to professional contacts, UnionCircle.com is specifically designed to connect you with your fellow union members and to keep you plugged into union activity locally and nationally. It is the perfect site for all union members because America's unions have always known that there is power in numbers and strength in unity. Listen, be heard, take action. Now is the time. UnionCircle.com is the place. Get in the circle. UnionCircle.com.
Welcome back. My guest again, Thomas Volsho. He is the assistant professor of sociology at the City University of New York College of Staten Island. And the study we are referencing was conducted through the American Sociological Association and appeared in the American Sociological Review. So I finally got that right. You can find them online, by the way, at asanet.org, asanet.org. Thomas Volsho, thank you for staying with us. Man, I could have kept you all day. I really find this stuff so interesting. Mostly because, you know, and Thomas, so you understand a little bit of the demographic of my community, my audience. We are a labor-centered, labor-focused radio show, if you didn't get that during the commercial break. We spend a lot of time trying to empower that labor voice, which we're going to talk about now, because as we know, the labor voice in this, the organized labor voice in this country has gotten smaller. That doesn't, well, by numbers, that doesn't mean they're quieter. It's just they're not representing as many people as they once did. And before we get there, of course, we've got to be very mindful that as we have this ongoing debate, Thomas, and we do it on this show and lots of other shows, certainly more conservative programs are arguing in a different direction. You have given us some definitive proof that what we suspected was true was indeed true. And I know I oversimplified it earlier on in our interview, but, you know, again, it does represent that the rich are getting richer and, if you will, the poor are getting poorer.
Right. That's been the case. The city of Detroit, I'm sure, learned that much earlier than the rest of the country.
Sadly.
There's lots of been written about it, pictures, the deindustrialization of America. You can see that in places like Detroit. Or I remember driving, to Rockford, Illinois, and you just like you're driving on Interstate 80 going west, and you drive through Gary, Indiana, where the Jackson family was from. It used to be a steel town, and it's like the bombed-out war zone. And a lot of that deindustrialization, offshoring, all that process, really, it's about, you know, getting rid of these labor unions that the United States that we had. And the diminishing labor union membership in this country is what, you know, it's compared to most other industrial democracies, highly developed capitalist countries, the United States labor union membership is the lowest. And so what we looked at that in the study. I was interested in that because, I'd done other studies on the effects of labor unions, and labor unions tend to bring up the working and middle class. For instance, even myself, I am in a labor union as a professor. A lot of people wouldn't think of that. Like, you think of it as a white collar occupation, but we need a labor union or else we're going to be bullied by the city. It's really interesting. It's very, you know, it's quite the same, as many other sectors. So what we looked at in the study was private sector labor union membership, and that has been falling. It peaked in the 1950s such that 35% of the private sector were members of labor unions. And it's not just the union members who benefit from that, but there's a generalized effect on everybody, because labor unions fight for broad middle class, working class goals, high minimum wage, good unemployment compensation, at the national political level, even at state legislature level. So the more union members, the more union dues, the more political clout of the unions, and the more they can fight for those broad middle class goals. And then you have the direct things with the actual union members supported by a contract with their either employer or their industry or their general regional area that they live in. So if you're interested in why private sector unions have been under such assault for 30 years, well, that's because that's where the money is. So we found that when union membership went down by one percentage point. So if the percentage of private sector, say there's 35% in a labor union, and then the next year it's 34%, our estimate showed that this would increase the share of income going to the rich by 0.40 percentage points, which sounds kind of small, but with $7.8 trillion, that means that every time labor union membership goes down by one percentage point, the super rich accrue, the top 1% accrues an extra $33.4 billion.
Yeah, that's a significant chunk of change, Thomas Volshow. There's no question about that. And I find all this stuff so fast. I'm curious, how has the media responded to this study? I mean, this just came out October 1st. What has media response been to this?
There's been very little. It's sort of been ignored. It's gotten a little bit of coverage, and a little mention here and there. A couple people tweeted it that are in prominent places. And those people are interested in it. And so it's sort of been, I don't know if it's just the debates overshadowing something like this, or it's maybe because Occupy Wall Street. The movement isn't dead. It's just sort of morphed into other things. And it's, people are regrouping and thinking of new strategies besides the public occupations. So I think, if it came out around then, it might have been more, people might have talked about it.
Well, let me suggest, Professor, that maybe the reason that it's being, I don't want to say ignored, but not focused on or highlighted is because it really proves an importantly dramatic point. And I'm not trying to be overly dramatic, but it certainly does prove a point. And that point, quite simply, is under Republican rule, the things that we talk about on this show, the millionaires and billionaires that are making sure that we're not only electing representatives at the local, the state, and the federal level that are more conservative. We're also now seeing investments made in those that are running for Supreme Courts where that money is allowed to go. We're seeing that trail there. It's because the 1%, Thomas Volshow, are benefiting greatly from Republican rule.
Right. I mean, it's like it's an amazing different world, right? Because if you talk to most people, you could do that Reagan quip, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? If you talk to most, the 99%, right, are you better off? No, things are worse off. Most people will answer you, I'm not doing better. I've had to dip into my savings, my pension account. Some people, I've never even had a savings or pension account. And then you have this 1% where it's like every year their wealth advisor sits down in their mansion and says, you guys, things are really good. I see this beautiful family. It's like an aura and things are just amazing. And, this is how much richer you got this year compared to last year. And your value of your assets have gone up and your income went up. So it's just like a completely different, universe.
It is a completely different universe, and of course, those of us that are in the 99%, but although I do find it interesting, Thomas, and maybe sometime we can have a conversation from a sociological perspective on how those that live in the 99%, their mentality is as a 1%er. I've never quite been able to wrap my head around that.
Right. There's always this, there's always been this idea in the United States of social mobility that people will, swim across the Atlantic Ocean practically to come to the United States or from wherever and have opportunities, right? So for a period of time after World War II, there were pretty good middle class opportunities in the United States. There was problems with racism. There was a civil rights movement and there was a Vietnam War, so not everything was peachy keen, but in the economic domestic front, there was powerful labor unions, good jobs, relatively good jobs, and the ability to sort of move up from say a poor or blue collar position to a more stable blue collar position. Or
yeah,
like
Thomas, I hate to interrupt you. We are just out of time. I think that you and I will be in touch. I've enjoyed this a great deal, and we've got everything posted to the Facebook page so people can go check it out. Thomas, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
No, I appreciate it. Dave Kirsten, when we continue, folks, don't go anywhere. This is one you got to hear.
This is State Representative Thomas Stallworth, the 7th Legislative District, and I just want to wish everyone a happy, happy holiday.
Next time you need to stop for groceries, the 42,000 members of the United Food and Commercial Workers in Michigan ask you to shop at one of the stores where they work, including Kroger, Meijer, Hiller's, and Hollywood Markets. Shopping at these union stores helps support good union jobs, which build healthy communities. If you already shop at these stores, our members want to thank you for your support.
Shocking news in the world of heavy metal. One of the hardest bands on the planet is about to release a children's record. Songs slated to appear on the album include A Tisket a Tasket, Hey Diddle Diddle, and The Hokey Pokey. Let's listen to a sneak preview. Here's Ring Around the Rosie, performed by the one and only...
Please deposit 25 cents for the next 3 minutes.
Radio. You shouldn't have to pay for it. This message brought to you by America's 13,000 local radio stations who believe some things were just meant to be free.
This is Detroit's Progressive Talk, 1310 WDTW, Dearborn, Detroit. Listen on iHeartRadio. NBC News is next.
NBC News Radio, I'm Barton. This Christmas Day is going to be white for some areas and wet for others. Snow will fall in the Great Plains, and sections of the southeast could be hit with tornadoes. NBC meteorologist Dylan Dreyer says the storms are moving east.
The area of concern this morning will be for the threat of tornadoes all through the morning and into this afternoon across Louisiana, into southern Mississippi and Alabama as well. Through the Midwest, there is a chance we could see 6 to 12 inches of snow.
Police have identified the gunman who they say killed two firefighters and injured two others at the scene of a blaze in the Rochester, New York suburb of Webster. 62-year-old William Spengler Jr. then took his own life. Police say Spengler spent 18 years in prison after killing his grandmother in 1981. Former President George H.W. Bush will spend Christmas in a Houston hospital after developing a fever and weakness following a month-long bronchitis-like cough. This is NBC News Radio. Pope Benedict marked Christmas Eve with Mass in St. Peter's Basilica. He said he's worried there is no room left for God in our hectic and technology-driven lives. NBC's Martin Fletcher says pilgrims gathered in Bethlehem in the West Bank.
Midnight Mass in the Church of Nativity in Bethlehem. Peace, love, goodwill to all mankind. The Christmas message from the cradle of Christianity. All day, pilgrims and tourists crammed into Manger Square.
Some customers of Netflix found their Christmas Eve movie streaming a little bit choppy due to an outage at Amazon's North Virginia data centers. The Food and Drug Administration is warning five eye care providers about misleading advertising and promotion of eye surgery procedures such as LASIK. The FDA says consumers should be aware that eye surgery is irreversible and that not all patients will achieve optimal results. I'm Barton Eckert, NBC News Radio.
Dear Honda, thanks for getting Dad a deal on a new Accord during Happy Honda Days. You saved me from being completely humiliated when he drives the carpool. Rearview camera means no adult language when backing out of Katie's driveway. And Pandora compatibility means no more CDs with Keytar. Now I might survive middle school without too many emotional scars. Sincerely, Sean.
More happiness and standard features with every Honda during the Happy Honda Day sales event. Get a deal on the all-new Accord with Pandora compatibility and rearview camera. Standard. See your Honda dealer today.
Pandora Internet Radio compatible with select smartphones. Wireless carrier rates apply.
Imagine your favorite cigarette. Now, imagine it without the smoke and cigarette smell. Like introducing the Enjoy King, the first electronic cigarette with the look, feel, and flavor of the real thing. Finally, smokers have a real alternative. New Enjoy King. Cigarettes, you've met your match. Available at participating 7-Eleven and Get-Go stores. Not for sale to minors. Contains nicotine, which is addictive. Find out more at enjoy.com.
How's this for an incentive to lose weight? The fear of losing money. Many apps and programs give out rewards for fitness achievement. An iPhone app called GymPact charges users a fee for every gym commitment that they skip. GymPact's founder says the app is based on the concept of loss aversion, that people are more motivated by loss than by gain. After providing a credit card, users of GymPact make a commitment to go to the gym a certain number of times each week and to pay a financial penalty if they don't. The fees can range from $5 to $50. At the end of the week, GymPact charges users who fail to meet their goals, and the money is distributed to users who kept their commitments. The more days they committed to, the more money they get back. GymPact pays out anywhere between 50 cents and $1 for each workout and keeps around 30% of each payout. To validate the time spent at the gym, users must check in at a venue for 30 minutes for the workout to count. I'm Charlie Turner from the MarketWatch.com Wall Street Bureau.
I'm Dan Kelly, owner of GoTime Fitness. I'm always trying to stay top of mind with my customers, and Constant Contact has the tools to help me do that. They make it so easy. So when my daughters started a business of their own, Constant Contact was the best advice I could give them.
Dad, we're nine.
It's a lemonade stand.
Never too early to start.
From deals to events, social to email, Constant Contact can help you grow your business. Find the solution that's right for you at ConstantContact.com.
Hey, Fred, where you at?
Oh, hi, Eddie. Fred's inside doing the breakfast dishes for me.
Really? How'd you manage that?
I told him I'd take the car and get it serviced. Say, you got a recommendation where to go?
Parts Plus Car Care Center. Good people, good service. I've told Fred, but he never listens.
Well, I'm listening. Just tell me how to get there.
Okay, but don't tell Fred you heard it from me.
Oh, I'll just tell him. I heard about him on the radio. Now, about those directions.
For the location nearest you, go to PartsPlus.com.
Imagine your favorite cigarette. Now, imagine it without the smoke and cigarette smell. Like introducing the Enjoy King, the first electronic cigarette with the look, feel, and flavor of the real thing. Finally, smokers have a real alternative. New Enjoy King. Cigarettes, you've met your match. Not for sale to minors. Contains nicotine, which is addictive. Find out more at Enjoy.com.
Weather Channel Wednesday night event. Where there is open water, there is danger.
Lifeguard dispatch, I'm on scene.
Two teams, two coasts, one mission. Save your life. From the rocky shores of Southern California.
He is unconscious, but she is breathing.
To the beaches of South Florida.
Drug runner, shipwrecked. We see it all here.
They risk it all for the rescue.
Prepare for the worst, out for the best.
A Wednesday night original series event. Lifeguard Southern California at 8 Eastern. Coast Guard Florida at 9. Premiering Wednesday, January 23rd. Only on the Weather Channel.
The comments, ideas, and opinions expressed in the following program are those of the show participants only. Nothing stated in this program reflects the ideas, opinions, or beliefs of this radio station and or Clear Channel Radio.
We have all heard the term fiscal cliff. Yes, yes. We have all heard the term sequestration, of course. We heard this, of course, a lot during the campaign that just ended. But what do we know about it in general and more specifically, and what will be done? Will on January 3rd, without a compromise, which may be out of reach, will there be cuts to our military and its operation? And how profoundly would they affect the way we govern and the way we protect and serve? Well, joining me now is somebody to help us work through those and more questions. And joining me this morning is Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, U.S. Army retired. He is a senior fellow, Center for Advanced Defense Studies, and in the first printing of his Afghanistan memoir, Operation Darkheart, was brought up and destroyed by the Defense Department to preserve secrecy, psychology of terrorism, leadership, effects-based operations, and taking care of our troops. I care about all of that. And Lieutenant Colonel Schaefer, thank you for being with us today. Now, is it Schaffer or Schaefer?
Oh, Schaefer is the correct way to pronounce it.
Schaefer, very good. First of all, let me wish you a happy Veterans Day, and thank you for not only your service to this country, but your ongoing service to this country.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me. And it was an honor to serve the country for 30 and a half years. And as many of us, we continue, you know, there's no expiration date on our oath of office, so I think many of us continue to fight the good fight to try to find ways to better defend, to continue to defend the country against our adversaries, doing it in a smarter way.
Let me ask this first question, and we'll go about it in two ways. We've got plenty of time to have this discussion. So here's the question. And with the first part of it, it's with sequestration. There's not a compromise. The second part is if there is a compromise. But let's start with they can't compromise. The dialogue may be there. The president may said, as he did this weekend, he's open to compromise. The Republicans say they're ready for the president to show leadership on this issue. But we've been down this road before. What happens to the military establishment as we know it if they do not come to a compromise by January 3rd?
Well, I think, first off, it's insane that we are to this point. I mean, this sequestration issue has been on the books for over a year, and yet no one took it seriously. So here we are, literally, at the 11th hour, and doomsday is almost here. And let me answer the longer-term question in two parts. First, come January 1st, we're not going to see the catastrophic failure of Department of Defense. It's just not going to happen. There's layers of defense. I would argue far too many layers of defense that aren't actually even doing anything right now. But with that said, I think you can fall back on multiple layers of security. So I don't think, you know, you're going to see anything per se that for the first day of January. This the effects, the adverse effects will be incremental. I think first off, the psychological effect will permeate over the next year if they don't do anything to stop it. The second effect is something much more real, and I think we started seeing big contractors posture themselves to do. Boeing and other contractors are looking at the potential of laying off literally tens of thousands of defense workers. And at this critical time, when we are seeing an economy that's barely moving forward, the introduction into the unemployment ranks of literally tens of thousands of highly skilled workers, who, by the way, would be drawing the top amount of money from any welfare program, would see a devastating effect over probably the next year. I would say it would probably start showing up in the economy the April-May timeframe, but it would be quite bad and quite distinct. So those are the first things we should think about regarding what sequestration actually means. So for your audience to understand, you know, you're not going to see, you know, midnight of the 1st of January, we're not going to see devastation overnight, but it will be distinct. It will happen over time, and it is something that will devastate the lives of a lot of Americans directly, and frankly, in the long term, will affect our ability to sustain the Defense Department as it stands today. With that said, I don't think that the Defense Department should stand as it does today. I think there's things we should do and could do to reform, revise, and create more efficient Defense Department spending on real issues. And that's the other issue here that no one's looked at. No one has actually taken the time to do essentially a global strategy based on threat, which in my argument, my estimation, we should base our spending based on threat, not based on programs and trends, which really started in the Cold War and continue to this very day.
Well, that Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, U.S. Army retired, brings up a great point. During the campaign, Romney, and there was that whole, you know, he was going to give $2 trillion to the military. And this idea that we throw money at the military may seem patriotic, but it may be the actual opposite of that. Throwing money at a problem that doesn't exist or funding things that weren't asked for is a curious way to go about it. With that said, how do we take a real look at our current military, ask ourselves one of, I think, is an obvious question, as we modernize, as technology becomes more important, as we understand the psychology of defense better, you know, is there a different way to reform and reshape our military?
Well, absolutely, and I spoke out several times, and I'm a conservative. I said that the whole idea of spending $2 billion additional dollars to whatever amount without understanding why you want to spend that money is truly insane. Throwing money at a problem does not make us any safer. It only bloats us. So these are the things I would do, and I am sorry that neither side brought these up during the election campaign. But first off, you've got to look at the underpinnings of our entire defense establishment. The whole structure, the whole legal structure, the whole fiscal structure was established in the National Security Act of 1947. Now, I don't know of any organization, civilian or military, that has not had fundamental changes brought to it since 1947. But that is basically the underpinnings of our defense establishment. There was a minor adjustment made in 1986, something called Goldwater-Nichols, which in my judgment may have helped us win the Cold War, but has made things far worse regarding the bloat and programs we now face. So the Cold War ended. Let's just give it a rough date of 1990. And yet, here we are, literally over 20 years later, using the same system that was designed in the late 40s to win the Cold War. So we've got to take a hard look. Do we need bases globally everywhere we're at right now? Do we need to fund programs, which literally we started in the 1950s and 60s and continue to this day? And these are the things we have to take a hard look at. Are these benefiting us and the American, you know, us as the defense establishment and the American people as a whole? And then once you look at this, you need to do what we call a global strategy. I've talked to several retired four-star generals, and one of the things that's lacking, and frankly it lacked during the Bush White House as well, was a global strategy. What are we investing in? What does our future look like, and what kind of threats do we expect to face? And you then take that strategy, you basically redo the laws, you modernize the laws. These laws that were written for the Defense Department were not written during the cyber age. And things have changed dramatically over the past 30 years. And with that said, then, you need to have people who are smart on the Hill on Congress who are willing to listen to the facts rather than listen to the lobbyists, because so much of what goes on, and President Eisenhower warned us about this potential. He called it the Congressional Military Industrial Complex, where you become so tied between the policymakers on the Hill and the corporate leaders of these big companies that it becomes an incestuous relationship which perpetuates itself. Well, we're there. And this is why we've got to break that really bad cycle between Capitol Hill and these large defense industrial complex leadership organizations, which continue to help fund this entire very expensive defense, which frankly does not make the American people any safer based on the current threat.
You know, Tony Schaefer, it sounds to me like what you're saying is we're not having the conversations we must have.
Oh, we're not. No, you're right. And this is what, and let me point this out to your audience, that these things are not hidden. Secretary of Defense Panetta, President Obama's own Secretary of Defense, said within the last 3 weeks that he's afraid of a quote-unquote electronic cyber Pearl Harbor. So that tells me that if you have the Secretary of Defense announcing that the Iranians are in our infrastructure doing things to it, you got to start taking notice, because he wouldn't say that unless there was a clear and compelling issue. So what we need to do is take a step back. Do we need to invest completely in these large, expensive defense fighters? I mean, the F-22, the B-2, the B-1, all these things which really were great during the Cold War. They helped us push us through the threshold to win that war, to win the Cold War. But with that said, we need to assess now what is in the best interest of the United States, of the American people, based on what we really have to worry about relating to those threats, rather than, again, perpetuating our trends, our programs, based on laws written in 1947 and programs developed by the Pentagon during the Cold War, which no one has had the courage, and this is the key, have the courage to just say, we don't need to do this anymore, we need to reinvest these resources somewhere else.
All right, let me ask you to stay where you're at. We need to take a quick break here. My guest again is Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, U.S. Army retired, author of the book Operation Dark Heart. A very quick break, much more to get to. Feel free to join us, 888-552-3595. I'm Tony Truppiano. This is First Shift. We'll continue with this critically important discussion right after this.
Hi, this is Gilda Jacobs, CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy. I want to wish everybody a happy and safe and wonderful holiday season.
Hi, Tony Truppiano here. One of my pet projects for 2012 is to get those of you who have yet to register to vote to do just that. If you are connected to the Internet, I have made it very easy for you to register. Just go to www.thetonyshow.org. That's www.thetonyshow.org, and click on the Register to Vote button that is prominently displayed on the homepage. Now, there are no excuses, and it only takes a few minutes, and it's free as well. So if you have yet to register to vote, I am not concerned as to why, but I am concerned if you don't do it now. Again, just go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the button that says Register to Vote right here. We all care about our democracy, but if you are not registered to vote, then no matter how passionate you are, without voting or having the ability to vote, it's honestly just complaining, and we have all had enough of that. Again, go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the Register to Vote button now and register.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off, than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have that peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Sergeant Matthew Kyle was on his second tour in Iraq when injured.
I was shot in the neck by an Iraqi sniper while on combat patrols.
As a quadriplegic, Sergeant Kyle will require specialized medical care and benefits for the rest of his life. That's where Paralyzed Veterans of America can help. National Service Officer Bobby Hager explains.
A National Service Officer exists solely to help veterans get their benefits. We're able to fill out all of the forms and applications and ask for all of the benefits that veteran's entitled to.
Matthew's wife, Tracy Kyle.
We don't have the knowledge to go through this by ourselves. And these benefits are going to take you through the rest of your life.
If you don't ask for a benefit, the VA can't give it to you. The veteran doesn't know what to ask for.
We could not have done this journey without the Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Paralyzed Veterans is an independent, not-for-profit organization founded by vets for vets.
To help, visit pva.org.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Merlin Olsen, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Yo, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Very googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contest.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us
at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
Welcome back. 22 minutes after 9 o'clock. My guest again, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, U.S. Army retired, author of the book Operation Dark Heart. He is also a senior fellow at the Center for Advanced Defense Studies. Tony, tell us a little bit about the Center for Advanced Defense Studies, please.
Well, we're a non-profit, public charity focused on defense issues which are considered complex. Obviously we have interns who come and do research with us. They actually go to other degree producing programs. And our motto is basically innovations for peace. We actually look deeper at root issues, at root causes, and try to assess how we can go about trying to prevent conflict, essentially mitigate conflict to competition. We want to find ways to create a circumstance globally for individuals of any nation, any belief, any faith, to find a path forward that does not include violence. I know that may sound strange coming from a military guy, but we actually do seek to find ways of bringing people the benefits of having a stable, economically supportable life, which I think would then prevent them or discourage them from wanting to take any radical path. And I think that, again, we haven't been looking deep enough at the source issues of why we have radicalism, and I think we are too often to go to military violent force before we go to other options, and that's one of the things our think tank actually studies.
You know, it occurs to me as I'm having this discussion with you, and I want to equate it for a moment to education reform, where we ask everybody what we need to do except the teacher. It seems that when we're looking at defense reform, we're asking everybody what needs to be done except those within the Defense Department. I mean, there seems to be a disconnect here that legislators, many of them who have no military experience at all, somehow are smarter or more enlightened because of their consultants or whoever's in for lobbyists than those that are actually performing the task, Tony, or do I have this wrong?
No, I understand, and I think this is where you're completely correct. I think too often the people that take advice from are those who are paid to give them advice, and I think often if you have people paying to have you say something, you're essentially giving a form of advertising, and I obviously we don't take money like that. We actually are independent. We give advice to every member of Congress who asks for it independently, and that's one of the issues here. We actually do work very hard, and one of my main allies on Capitol Hill is Representative Walter Jones. Walter is a Republican from North Carolina who actually does take the time to try to understand the deeper issues. And he'll listen to all sides. And I know there's folks on the left as well. I've talked to folks several times recently on defense issues relating to how do we actually create a coalition, left-right coalition, which actually does good things for the nation rather than good things for the Department of Defense. So Jim McGovern, Representative Jim McGovern from Massachusetts, another great guy on the left who actually has a great deal of interest in trying to do the right thing, the right thing forward. Well, the problem was, if we remember, we had something called the Super Committee year before last that actually tried to engage in this effort. And I would argue that they picked the wrong people to be on it. You had Patty Murray, a Democrat from Washington State, and you had Pat Toomey, a Republican from Pennsylvania, both of which who had Boeing as prominent employers within their states. And I would argue, no matter what side you're on, left or right, if you have an employer who employs thousands of people, you're going to be very reluctant to make any hard decisions which would cut back on the spending to that defense contractor, which in turn then would affect your own bottom line. This is why we should have had other people who are qualified but not so committed politically to the issue that should have sat back and made some of the harder evaluations decisions regarding long-term spending of the Pentagon.
Well, there's no question that this should, A, be nonpartisan, and we know it's not. And certainly, I mean, the two examples you use are excellent examples, although one's a Republican and one's a Democrat. They are beholden to those that contribute to their campaign and are important to job creation in their districts, or if you're a senator, of course, in your state. And so, of course, Tony Schaefer, as we take a look at that, are we ever going to have a real discussion about reform? Are we ever going to have a real discussion about this fiscal cliff? Is it ever going to be based in reality, except instead of, you know, based in personal and personal need? And this really is about personal need for those that have to worry about reelection every 2 to 6 years.
Right. It is. What we need to do is as you point out, we need to get back to the reality and the facts. We have three big threats we have to look at. First, energy. Not so much our energy supply. I think we can develop our own. But global energy is going to be the next Cold War, because our allies, because our friends, the Indians, all depend on a finite number of points of resource regarding petroleum. So that's something we have to all pay attention to. Next, natural resources and water, potable water. A lot of the world does not enjoy having free and open access to drinkable water and resources necessary to build their society. Again, there's huge competition there. And third, something we've already experienced and I mentioned earlier, cyber. We have built a huge cyber infrastructure, which is effective. It makes our lives better. But at the same time, we've built this Damocles sword hanging over our head because we've not fully hardened it against attack or things like electromagnetic pulse, which frankly can come from the sun. We could be devastated by a natural attack from the sun that would take down our infrastructure. So these are the things that we have to look at, we must assess, and must build a defense around and for, rather than continuing down the path based on, again, guidance and directives and laws made in 1947 and spending that continues to be basically Cold War-based, a war that we won back in the early 1990s.
Well, in the very short amount of time we have left, which is not fair to you, but it is what it is. The clock is ticking away. Let's bring this conversation back to the fiscal cliff. Of course, there's going to, you know, there's a finite amount of time to get some compromise put together. We know that social programs are on the table. Will we not?
Right.
Will defense get saved in this? I mean, again, this just goes back to people immediately equate defense funding with patriotism, whether they should or not.
I think it's going to have to be based on everything I'm hearing, and I'll be down on the Hill later today and tomorrow listening to folks who are talking about this. I'd like to believe we will have a practical path going forward. The defense, real practical cuts will be made, but not devastate the Defense Department, and that's where I think we have to have experts come in to advise Congress, and I think we can do this. Look, Ronald Reagan cut defense during the time he was president in the middle of the Cold War. We can surely find a way to cut it now and be efficient and effective without being expensive.
Well, again, I want to thank you for your service to this country, both during your time as a member of the United States Army. And certainly, as a civilian, as you said, you take that oath for life. You obviously take that seriously. And I want to thank you for your time this morning.
Paul, thank you for having me. Good to be on.
My pleasure. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, U.S. Army, retired again, author of the book Operation Dark Heart. Obviously, a lot to consider moving forward, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be hearing much more about this, but I think the brilliance of the conversation we just had is the conversation we're not having. Think about that for a moment while we get ready to go to break.
This is Mark Brewer, chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. On behalf of the Michigan Democratic Party, I want to wish everyone a safe and happy holiday season.
On 1310 WDTW.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Last year, one in five children was sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
I started using drugs when I was 13 years old. I started with pot, like most people probably do, alcohol, cigarettes, and eventually moved up to methamphetamine and went on to cocaine, and eventually ended up on heroin.
I did not have a life. I mean, I owned a multi-million-dollar advertising firm, and I couldn't function.
My husband packed the children and left. I had no idea where they were, but none of that mattered. All that mattered was smoking crack.
My parents, brother, and sisters are just baffled. You know, how can somebody that supposedly has so much be so miserable and keep throwing his life away?
And I remember my mother saying to me one day, "You're going to die if you don't get help." I wanted to have my life back and my family back. And that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
Two out, last of the ninth, bases loaded. Here's Santos. He's 0 for 4 today, 269 hitter for the year.
We could be going into extra innings here.
I agree. Here's the pitch to Santos. Fastball hit in the air, deep down the left field line. It's headed toward the pole. That ball is...
Please deposit 25 cents for the next 3 minutes.
Radio. You shouldn't have to pay for it. This message brought to you by America's 13,000 local radio stations who believe some things were just meant to be free.
Unions work. Did you know that workers covered by a union contract earn more money each year than non-union workers? And that a contract can put more dollars in your pocket each and every week? A union contract protects your wages, giving your family financial security. Does more money in your pocket sound good? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Recently on First Shift,
Pastor Reverend D. Alexander Bullock.
If we're organized, then we can push the elected officials to represent the people, to make sure that resources are expanded and spread throughout the region in a way that is equitable and helpful for all people. We should have no child left behind, no community left behind. We should not have a race to the bottom, but there should be a floor for the poor and indeed a roof for the rich.
First Shift with Tony Tribbiano on 1310 WDTW.
Stay connected with us. First Shift is on Facebook and Twitter.
Follow us, like us,
love us. At Tony Tribbiano on Twitter and add a like to the First Shift with Tony Tribbiano page today.
The reason that I really am cherishing this relationship is that it has allowed us to expand our view of education matters. We certainly are closely aligned and are supported by the Michigan Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers, which are relationships that I appreciate, and certainly we wouldn't be on the air without them. But that is but one side of many issues. The Michigan PTA brings a fresh and sometimes interesting perspective. And they are very thoughtful. And so as we continue to look at issues that matter to us, and many of you know, education is one of my greater priorities, and certainly we can consider it a top three priority. When issues come up, sometimes it's important to get that perspective. And so I cherish and honor, again, the relationship that we have been able to build with the Michigan PTA. Joining me now to talk about one of those issues is Shatan Berry, who is the president of the Michigan PTA, and she joins us once again, and we appreciate her time. Shatan, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you, Tony, for having us back, and we truly appreciate this relationship that we've built with your show as well.
Well, you know, I do believe, as I just said in the opening, that you know we do have to look at these issues from multiple perspectives. I certainly have my bias. I'm not. I don't try to hide that, but I also want to tell a full story, Shatan. We're talking about Senate Bill 620, and I think it's important before we get into some of the nitty gritty that we give the audience a little background on what SB 620 is all about. Can you help us out there?
Senate Bill 620 is referred to as a parent trigger bill. And what it does is it gives parents and the community a kind of control over what's happening with these low-performing schools. So it's saying that the community can get together, the parents can say, this isn't working, we want something different. And we applaud that part of the bill. It's getting people engaged, making them understand the educational process, and letting them have a voice. So that is something that we truly applaud about this bill.
Okay, and I think that's important as well. Listen, we all want accountability. We all want transparency. We all want a path to solutions. I think we can agree on that, yes?
Yes.
Does Senate Bill 620 give us all of that?
Not really. It gives a little bit, but we would just like to see some further improvements on that. One of the things, there's a few things that we see wrong or need to be improved with the bill, but the first thing is that this bill allows for parents, 51% of parents can vote to take over a school, or 50% of parents and 60% of teachers can vote to take over a school, and they can either go with one of the turnaround methods that the state already has. One of that could be firing the principal and half of the teachers and putting new people in place. Or they can contract with the education management organization, the EMO, to run the school, basically turn the school into a charter school. And but the law doesn't provide or state that they have to, that the EMO, the education management organization, has to be a nonprofit organization, or that it has to be a Michigan-based organization. And so we think that those are two things that need to be there. We don't think that public funding should be going into the that corporations should be receiving those funds and being able to run our schools. And the fact that if we're going to go to an EMO, at least make it be one that's here in Michigan to help our own economic recovery.
Well,
to take our dollars out of Michigan makes no sense.
And certainly, right, as a way of background, well, first of all, let me make the comment that we're talking about our tax dollars, number one. But as some background, when they lifted the lid off charter schools, one of the provisions the Democrats tried to place in as an amendment was to make them all not-for-profits. The Republican legislature would absolutely not consider that amendment and dropped it from that legislation. So it is not a surprise that SB 620 would exclude or would not exclude for-profit schools or groups, or companies, if you will, because they are businesses at the end of the day, and they are for-profit businesses. Therefore, they need to be profitable as part of their fiduciary responsibility to their board or to their mission statement. With that said, is that the best way to serve our children's educational needs? And I'm guessing the Michigan PTA is saying, no, it's not the best way to serve our children's educational needs.
No, we don't want our schools to be corporations and that it becomes just about a profit, because it should just be about educating children.
Absolutely. Now, you know, one of the, and I want to read from the press release that you sent me, and I want you to comment on this, Shatan Berry, if you will. The bill as written would set goals of 80% attendance and 80% graduation rate for schools that were taken over under the new law. While we are pleased to see accountability measures included in this bill, we do not feel that these are appropriate. Are they even realistic?
Well, I mean, maybe. But attendance and graduation rates don't show that students are, one, prepared to go to career or college, and I thought that's the goal of everything that we're supposed to be doing, is to make sure that when our kids leave high school, they're prepared for career or college. And graduation rates and attendance doesn't mean that. So if I come to school 80% of the time, I should pass.
All right. Well, no, I get that. I mean, I get that. I just, you know, I'm, and I don't know, and I don't know that you know the answer to this, but let's just talk about the top 30% of schools. Are they reaching these goals? Do they have 80% attendance? Do they have 80% graduation rates? I don't know the answer to that. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that either, but that's something that I will go and begin to research to find out, to see if this is even realistic, to say that those two are a reasonable benchmark to say that a school is achieving.
Well, you know, and I want to underscore something, and I think that you and I will both agree on this, that and we hit on it really just a few minutes ago, but I have no problem with accountability, and I think it's wonderful that parents can have a say in the success or the unsuccess of a particular school. Here's my problem. I was involved, very involved, with the PTA when my kids were younger. Parents don't get engaged. And I'm talking about my issue with this, Shatan, and you know this. In every one of your chapters around the state, you have that core group of moms, mostly moms, some dads, but very few, that show up year after year after year to carry the torch of that parental message. But the reality is, to get 51% of people to do something may not be impossible, but will they be informed? That's always been my concern about this parent trigger legislation. that the majority of people are really going to be sheep, just following the word of somebody that has an agenda.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of scary because, you know, where it started out at in Oakland, California, they have for-profit companies going out into the neighborhoods, into low-income neighborhoods with gas cards and Visa cards and gift cards to get them to sign this petition. And, you know, and I am hoping that we would never have something like that that happens here in Michigan, but the possibility is there. And so we want to make sure that they define who actually can vote. I mean, the other part of it is that with this bill comes seizure of property, taking over property from the school board. I mean, you know, there's a lot of other issues that come with this that we just need some clarity on. We're not saying you're wrong for having this bill, but let's refine it. Let's make it stronger. Let's make it more about educating kids and not about profiting companies.
No, they're fundamentally, I can't imagine that anybody would disagree with anything you just had to say. How close is this bill to passage in the Senate? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I think it passed in the out of the Senate, and it's in the committee, the Senate Education Committee.
Okay.
So we're expecting that maybe there will be some public hearings on this in the next month.
All right. Well, that, so, you know, and I don't know if this is something they want to try to get done in their lame duck session or not, but, you know, again, it is incomplete, and I want to make that point. It is incomplete legislation.
Yeah, I mean, and one of the other things that we talked about with accountability is charter school accountability. And we want this to go across not just with these parent trigger schools, but across the board for charter schools, as the bill will require revoking the charter of a parent-seized school if it's still underperforming after 4 years. And we would like to see the provision apply to all charter schools that time limit is 3 years.
All right. But
if there is no performance in 3 years, to shut the charter school down.
All right, we need to take a quick break. Chetan Berry, stay with us.
This is John Feigl from the Sugar Law Center for Economic and Social Justice in Detroit, Michigan, wishing everybody out there listening, Tony and all the folks at the station, a warm and happy holiday.
On 1310 WDTW.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
speed pouring, drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for,
and much more.
All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan. Please call 313-962-5020 Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan. Your future is waiting for you now.
Today in the United States, labor is under siege. Unions are being assailed. In states like Wisconsin and Ohio, collective bargaining rights are being stripped away, and so-called right-to-work laws aim to eliminate unions entirely so companies can pay less or outsource jobs completely. As a result, you're being divided, and there's no one place for you to be heard, no one place to speak, no one place to stand together until now. Welcome to UnionCircle.com, an online community created specifically for union members. A place where 40 million active and retired union members, their friends, family, and supporters all across North America can be counted. UnionCircle.com provides a forum for members to interact and build a powerful voice. Union members can share their thoughts and opinions. Union locals can post news and announcements. People who run for public office and who stand with the unions can spread their message and rally union members. Because united we stand, united we vote. You'll also find union-friendly businesses that offer Circle members exclusive discounts, promotions, special offers, rewards, and coupons, all to help support America's workforce. And all UnionCircle.com members can create a call to action to make a real difference in their city, their jobs, and their lives. UnionCircle.com is the online community for anyone who believes in restoring the middle class and that the strength of this nation is in its workers. It's a website just for you. Will UnionCircle.com replace Facebook? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's tightly integrated with both Facebook and Twitter. But while Facebook and Twitter connect you to family and friends and LinkedIn to professional contacts, UnionCircle.com is specifically designed to connect you with your fellow union members and to keep you plugged into union activity locally and nationally. It is the perfect site for all union members because America's unions have always known that there is power in numbers and strength in unity. Listen. Be heard. Take action. Now is the time. UnionCircle.com is the place. Get in the circle. UnionCircle.com.
Seducing teen girls online is easy. A lot of them feel so lonely and misunderstood. I don't even need to lie about my age. They're just glad they're talking to someone
older I can trust. They're more mature than the guys at my school and understand me better than other
teen girls are very trusting. You just have to tell them they're beautiful and special, and you can wear down whatever suspicions they have.
Have an understanding of real love. It's not all about looks. They know that doesn't matter when you're totally in love.
Love is the final piece of the puzzle. They believe anything I tell them because
I don't see why you shouldn't meet someone you totally trust. I mean, if someone really cares about you, there's no danger in
meeting them. No matter how long it takes, is always the goal. Once I get them to meet me, well, that's when things get really interesting.
Online predators know what they're doing. Do you?
1 in 5 kids online is sexually solicited. Don't believe the type. Visit cybertipline.com to learn more. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
My guest again, Chetan Berry, the president of the Michigan PTA. You're going to find them online at michiganpta.org. That's michiganpta.org. We're talking about proposed Senate Bill 620, or what is called parent trigger legislation. You know, Chetan, one of the questions, I have a couple big questions. One of them is, as we talk about accountability, and do charter schools have to meet the same burden that public schools do? And I don't believe that they do, and this law does not change that.
No, they don't. I mean, a lot of charter schools, they have the freedom to be innovative, to be different from traditional public schools, and that doesn't always happen. And, you know, I'm not a opponent of charter schools per se because they're public schools, they receive public funding, so we support public education. However, if the charter school is designed and exists as the same as a traditional public school, then what's the point? The point of charters are to be different so that they can go in and do the things that traditional public schools can't do. And so we need that accountability to be there for charter schools at the same level that it is for public schools. And there are charter schools that are out there doing some great work. So I don't want to make it seem as if they're not, because there are. But we need every charter school to be at that level, as well as every public school to be at that same level, to do great work, educate our children, to make sure that they're career and college ready when they leave out that door after 12th grade.
Well, and Chetan, as you and I both know, not only are not all charter schools better, they're just different, and that doesn't make them better by nature. And again, this doesn't address that. Let's go to the phones quickly and welcome Jeff in White Lake to First Shift. Jeff, thanks for your call this morning. You're on the air with Chetan Berry.
Tony, Chetan, thank you. I wanted to ask Chetan if she's heard of SB 1358, which was a bill introduced last week that's going to have the state create a what they call an educational achievement authority, which is going to be an appointed statewide board.
I thought we already had that, Jeff. I thought we already had the educational authority.
Well, it's only in Detroit right now, but 1358 does expand it across the state. And yes, we have been reviewing that bill, and actually my president-elect is going to be at the House Education Committee this afternoon to provide some testimony regarding that bill as well. We have numerous questions and issues with that bill as well. And the first one is that the EAA in Detroit hasn't issued its first semester report cards yet. We don't know if this thing is working. So how can we take it across the state when we don't even know if it's working yet?
I'm sorry, Jeff, I didn't...
Great to hear.
Okay. Did you have any other questions, or was that it?
Well, no, I'm just concerned about it because it also wants to create a statewide reform district, and it's going to... Part of the bill is going to require school districts to keep empty buildings up to code and maintain them for 2 years so that the district can open statewide schools in their buildings.
Okay.
And it doesn't say which school will be taken over. So if it's a brand new school that you built in your district and that's the school that they want, the whatever debt is owed on that building will still belong to the school district and not the new EAA.
All right, Jeff, thanks for your call. You know, Shatan, as I'm sitting here, you know, what the image that comes to mind is driving through a collision course with no light. Well, you know, it seems to me that we're making decisions based on philosophy, not on reality.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of strange to me to see that we have legislation in place, especially to expand the EAA when it hasn't been 6 months of the EAA yet. And if we're going to say that we're about data and we want to see proof and we want to make sure things work, I don't see the point of rushing into creating a statewide version of the EAA when we don't know if it's working or will work in the Detroit area.
Well, you know, even if you had a report card, even if you had a whole semester, is one enough? Is 1 year enough? Is 2 years enough? I think that, you know, you need to be much more deliberate in evaluating whether or not something works, and what may show progress in 1 year may not show progress after two. I mean, I think we should be more deliberate, don't you?
Yes, I think that we need to slow down and not just pass things and put them in legislation just because. Let's really sit down and think about what ways will it help us improve education across this state. There's none of us who can say that we don't need some education reform, but do we need this much reform, this fast, this quick, right now? I'm not sure that that's the correct answer.
Well, and I would, of course, fundamentally have to agree with that. It just seems, you know, it seems to me we go back to this charter school issue. We don't know that charter schools are working, and they've been around a while. We know some of them work better than others. Some of them have been successful. Some of them have been profound failures. And so in order to correct what is perceived to be a problem, and I'm not suggesting that there aren't public schools that are that are in need, that couldn't use reform, that are not serving our children well. I'm not suggesting that's not happening. At the same time, is the fix, and I think it's a fallacy, is the fix just turning it over to an educational for-profit institution and expecting things are going to change that quickly? Because that I don't think that fundamentally deals with the base issues of why a school system fails.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that no one can deny that we need some reform. No one can deny that there are school districts, there are schools, public schools and charter schools that are not doing the absolute best for our children. But let's work on a solution with everybody at the table and figure out how we can make this thing work. And, you know, and of course, Michigan PTA is all about family engagement, and that's not there in this bill.
Well,
so you have you have parents that can take over a school, and then there's nothing else in the bill that says, so we'll use these parents to do this.
Well, that's the point. Even if you get the necessary votes, then what? I mean, seriously, then what? How do we measure? How do we weigh? How do we begin the process of healing? And when, you know, we were talking about the 3 years or the 4 years, you know, this becomes quite a complicated equation. And then, of course, it takes, you know, charter schools aren't held to the same standard. And not only that, they're not held to the same rules. So the parents may be able to make this change, but how much of a voice do they have once that change is made? There's just so much we don't know.
Yeah, and so this is the thing that, you know, one of the things that we as Michigan PTA are trying to do is to educate parents, community members about the issues that happen in Lansing. What takes place in Lansing affects them at their home. And I think that's the connection that people don't make. when these type of decisions are made, when these type of laws are passed, it affects you at your address where you live.
Absolutely.
Whether you live close to a school or whether you have school-age children or not, it affects you. And so,
absolutely. Shatan, I don't mean to interrupt you. We're just out of time, but I'm sure we'll be revisiting this. Thanks so much. We've got to get a break.
Hi, this is David Hecker, president of AFT Michigan. For those who celebrate holidays during the season, we wish you the very, very best. Enjoy it with your family and friends, and thanks for listening.
Before A Damn Yankee played Old Sweet Home Alabama, before Free Bird was one of the greatest songs of all time, and before we made our gym teacher's name famous. That's right, you heard us, Lynyrd Skynyrd on the radio.
Radio, you hear it here first.
The odds of this Alaskan-born pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fastballing philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Next time you need to stop for groceries, the 42,000 members of the United Food and Commercial Workers in Michigan ask you to shop at one of the stores where they work, including Kroger, Meijer, Hiller's, and Hollywood Markets. Shopping at these union stores helps support good union jobs, which build healthy communities. If you already shop at these stores, our members want to thank you for your support.
This is Detroit's Progressive Talk, 1310 WDTW, Dearborn, Detroit. Listen on iHeartRadio. NBC News is next.
NBC News Radio, I'm Barton Eckert. Parts of Oklahoma, Arkansas, and southern Missouri could receive between 4 and 6 inches of sleet and snow today due to a major storm system. The Weather Channel's Mike Seidel in Oklahoma City says there could also be tornadoes.
One of the largest tornado threats we've ever seen on Christmas Day. Threat for tornadoes, large hail, and wind damage. We're watching cities along the Gulf Coast, including Mobile, Gulfport, Biloxi, Pensacola, up towards Montgomery.
Pope Benedict is wishing Christmas peace to the world, decrying the slaughter of the defenseless in Syria. The town of Webster in upstate New York is remembering two firefighters shot dead. Police believe William Spengler set fire to his house, ambushed the firefighters, and then shot himself to death. Actor Ben Affleck says he will not run for U.S. Senate in Massachusetts. He said in a Facebook post that he has a full plate of causes right now. This is NBC News Radio. 88-year-old former President George H.W. Bush will spend Christmas with his wife and other family members in a Houston hospital after developing a fever and weakness following a month-long battle with bronchitis. NBC's Charles Hadlock is in Houston.
Former First Lady Barbara Bush is at his side, and various family members, including former President George W. Bush, have visited in recent weeks. The fever is said to be under control now, but there is no discharge date announced.
There could be a strike come Sunday. Port workers at 4 Pacific Northwest docks have turned down what management calls its last, best, and final contract offer. The terminals handle more than a quarter of U.S. grain exports and nearly half the country's wheat exports. He was the sloppy sports writer Oscar Madison on TV's The Odd Couple. Actor Jack Klugman has died in Los Angeles at age 90. And two-time Oscar nominee Charles Durning has died in New York at age 89 of natural causes. I'm Barton Eckert, NBC News Radio.
Hi, how can I help you?
You already did. With my, car loan.
Sir?
You know, the great low-rate loan I got after you gave me that GM discount.
Excuse me, but did you just say something about a GM discount?
Oh, no, no, no. I said, I meant this counter instead of the other one.
Oh. Whew, that was close.
Sir, you really don't need to whisper. It's no secret. The credit union member discount from GM is available for all of our members.
Really?
Really?
Really? It's part of a program called Invest in America that gives credit union members special discounts on new Chevy, Buick, or GMC vehicles way below the MSRP. And as a member, you can save even more with some of the lowest financing rates available on auto loans.
That means I can save on a car and a loan.
Shh. What do you want everybody to know about it?
Actually, yes. With the GM discount and the Invest in America program, there's no better time to buy a new vehicle and to belong to a credit union. Visit lovemycreditunion.org. Credit unions are federally insured by the NCUA and are equal opportunity lenders.
Santa Claus put a lot of practical items in his pack this Christmas.
This year really is going to be, when we look back on it,
a year where we've seen much more practicality and frugality setting into the holiday business.
NPD Group's Marshall Cohen says things like running shoes and auto parts turned up on gift lists this year.
Being able to sit there and put product that the consumer would normally buy for themselves but have had to put off. So accessorizing one's car, fixing up one's car.
Cohen says home furnishings and home decor were also on the list.
Things that we traditionally don't see get the big lift at the holiday time. More practical items, things that the consumers had to put off until now.
Cohen says even young people are opting for practical gifts.
With the absence of new and exciting merchandise, it makes it pretty tricky. How many more handheld tablets do you need, or how many cell phones do you need? If you've upgraded, you don't really need to upgrade yet again this year.
I'm Tracy Jahnke from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
I'm Dan Kelly, owner of GoTime Fitness. I'm always trying to stay top of mind with my customers, and Constant Contact has the tools to help me do that. They make it so easy. So when my daughters started a business of their own, Constant Contact was the best advice I could give them.
Dad, we're nine. It's a lemonade stand.
Never too early to start.
From deals to events, social to email, Constant Contact can help you grow your business. Find the solution that's right for you at ConstantContact.com.
Hey, Fred, where you at?
Oh, hi, Eddie. Fred's inside doing the breakfast dishes for me.
Really? How'd you manage that?
I told him I'd take the car and get it serviced. Say, you got a recommendation where to go?
Parts Plus Car Care Center. Good people, good service. I've told Fred, but he never listens.
Well, I'm listening. Just tell me how to get there.
Okay, but don't tell Fred you heard it from me.
Oh, I'll just tell him I heard about him on the radio. Now, about those directions.
For the location nearest you, go to PartsPlus.com.
Imagine your favorite cigarette. Now, imagine it without the smoke and cigarette smell. Introducing the Enjoy King, the first electronic cigarette with the look, feel, and flavor of the real thing. Finally, smokers have a real alternative. New Enjoy King. Cigarettes, you've met your match. Available at participating 7-Eleven and Sheets stores. Not for sale to minors. Contains nicotine, which is addictive. Find out more at Enjoy.com.
A Weather Channel Wednesday night event where there is open water, there is danger.
Lifeguard dispatch, I'm on scene.
Two teams, two coasts, one mission, save your life. From the rocky shores of Southern California.
He is unconscious, but she is breathing.
To the beaches of South Florida.
Drug runner, shipwreck, we see it all here.
They risk it all for the rescue.
Prayer for the worst, hope for the best.
A Wednesday night original series event. Lifeguard Southern California at 8 Eastern, Coast Guard Florida at 9. Premiering Wednesday, January 23rd, only on the Weather Channel.
The comments, ideas, and opinions expressed in the following program are those of the show participants only. Nothing stated in this program reflects the ideas, opinions, or beliefs of this radio station and or Clear Channel Radio.
I turn my attention now to an op-ed that was in this weekend's Detroit Free Press. The guest commentary is titled, Why Can't Republicans Figure Out How to Win the White House? And joining us now is Ryan Fishman. Ryan's in Birmingham. He describes himself as a lifelong Republican who grew up in a family of Democrats, the poor guy. He is the vice president of strategic consultation at Steward Media. And, Ryan, I want to welcome you to First Shift this morning, and thanks for spending some time with us.
Tony, don't you want to know what they did wrong?
Oh, I think we can probably have that discussion. I think we know what they did wrong. I got to tell you, of course, you know I'm very liberal. I know you're very conservative. But you and I are going to agree on a lot of stuff this morning. And I want to start with this, Ryan. I was talking about this in the last hour. In order to have, I think, real hearty debate, in order to find true compromise, in order to plug a lot of holes that we have in our economic system, in our social system, and so on and so forth, we need two vibrant and relevant parties. And I don't think we have two vibrant, relevant parties right now. Your thoughts on that?
I think the problem with the modern Republican Party and the modern Democratic Party, too, because both parties are sort of doing the exact same thing, is they're shifting to the ends of the spectrum. They don't see that they're going to win in their primaries if they're trying to come to the middle. And so what you wind up with is a lot of candidates on the left and the right who have made erratic promises to people that, frankly, they can't keep for the sake of our stability, for the sake of bipartisanship, for the sake of moving forward. And the debate has become very odd, and it's not about the issues, and it's not about how we fix our problems. It's all about catering to fringe players. And I think if we can fix that in both parties, or at least try to move both parties forward to the middle, we can start to solve the problems that we have. And then after that, maybe we can go back and have some of these ancillary discussions.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about your party. And actually, you say, and this was a really well-written piece, Ryan. I really enjoyed your analysis. And you say that you actually maybe consider yourself more a conservative than a Republican. How hard was that to write?
You know, it wasn't that difficult, because this is something that's gone on in my head for a few years. You know, first, I'll say this. I go back to, yes, being a lifelong Republican in the House of Democrats, my mom an MEA teacher for 40 years. So that's why I write so well. I have to credit the Democrats for that. But ultimately, and I worked on George Bush's campaign in 2004. I was there through 2008. And then there was a lot of this sort of religious right sort of bubbling up and coming through, and it came up really 2006, those midterm elections, and I had questions about my faith in the Republican Party. And then after 2008, when the Tea Party resurfaced, a lot of people will disagree with me on this point, maybe not Democrats, but the Tea Party, I don't think, was any re-embodiment of great economic principles. It was another way for the religious right to repackage itself and say the exact same things, but with a new brand and a new identity. It worked. It was hot. It was fresh. It brought people into the fold. But now we have this ongoing battle to keep pushing our party farther and farther out to the religious spectrum. So it's not so difficult for me to say. I've really come to terms with this over the last 5, 6, 7 years, the fact that the Republican Party is moving in a direction that I'm not particularly fond of. But having said that, I'm still, in my mind, closer to a Republican the way, let's say, Ronald Reagan might have called himself a Republican, or the way Abraham Lincoln might have called himself a Republican. Small government and solving the problems in our country through small government, less intrusion into the fiscal system. And frankly, as I wrote in the column, big government doesn't need to come up because our church disagrees with the way people's social morality and values are going. We don't have to grow the size of government because we don't like what somebody else does in our own home. We just have to preach at home what we want our family to be, and that's how you preserve that part of the party's values.
Wow. The Republican Party needs to hire you as their chief strategist, because everything you've just said made way too much sense, Ryan. I think that's, and again, that's as true on the Democratic side. I think one of the things that Democrats have perhaps figured out better than Republicans is we don't necessarily feel like we've got to agree on everything, and we don't. Republicans, especially whatever we want to call the current day Republican Party, and I really noticed this the last 8 or 10 weeks of the campaign, if you don't agree with everything that's being said on the Republican side, then you're just not a Republican. And I think ultimately that hurt the brand in a pretty fantastic way. Listen, whether we can argue whether or not the president received a mandate on Election Day, whether that's true or not. But one thing we cannot debate is that the Republicans lost the White House on Election Day.
I think fundamentally, you make a very valid point. And as a matter of fact, when I was still in your business a few years ago after the 2008 election, I had a conversation with James Carville, who, you know, love him or hate him, Republicans, a lot of them don't like him. He made a very, very valid point along those lines, and his was, after a presidential election or any major election season loss, the Democrats sort of do this thing where they go out in a field somewhere and they sing Kumbaya and they figure out how they're going to work together for the next 4 years. And the Republicans start cutting heads off, and everybody wants to fight, and everybody wants to blame each other, and nobody can sort of work together. And having had some campaigns in this election cycle that I worked on and then we lost, one of the things that we found most important to do afterwards was sit down and figure out what did we do wrong and what did we do right the next time. And that, I think, is the fundamental thing Republicans failed to do. And it's unfortunate, because if we did sit down and analyze why we weren't successful and how we move forward together and in a positive way, we might be turning one election cycle loss into three election cycle wins. But we seem to struggle with that. And ultimately, the worst thing that we could continue to do now is splinter and move right If the Republicans don't move center now and work with Democrats and work with the president and solve the problems we have, there's no chance of success in four more years because nobody will trust us.
Wow. Well, no, there's a statement. Kind of made me a little speechless there, Ryan Frischman. All right. So here's the question. Do you envision that the John Boehner led House and the Mitch McConnell led Senate will do exactly what you just said? Will they work with their colleagues? Will they work with the president? Do they understand the reason they did not win is because America doesn't see them as being willing to compromise?
I hope so. I can't promise anything, but I certainly hope so. And I think the place to start, frankly, is, and I know this is sort of a tough matzo ball for people to swallow, but I think the place to start is having Democrats who are centrists, guys like Gary Peters, who I personally vote for and support. I actually can't anymore because I was gerrymandered out of his district. But there are a lot of great moderate Democrats in the House and in the Senate, the former statesmen, if you will, that I don't want to say Ted Kennedy necessarily, but, you know, these iconic sort of members of the House and Senate leaders were moderate people who knew how to build relationships across the aisle. What we need to do is have guys like Gary Peters try and reach their hand out and find partners in the Republican Party, because they're so good at doing that, and convince those guys that we have to work together. And then I think there is a job to be done at the top, and I think I've heard John Boehner and Mitch McConnell say this in the last few days. It's time for us to figure out how we're going to sit at the table and what we're going to do. If we don't do that, that's the end of the modern era of leadership. And I think it's a question of job security. If I was a Republican in the House or Senate right now and worried about reelection in another 2 years or 4 years, I'd be thinking about how I'm going to get reelected, because as a political strategist, I always think about how people get reelected. And my thought, my point to anybody would be, you've got to make yourself look like somebody who's willing to go to Washington and work, because the approval ratings are at an all-time low. And the reason is people think that people in politics don't want to work on anything.
Now, unfortunately, Ryan Frischman, there's a great deal of truth to what you've just said. I don't imagine, as liberal as I am, I also understand the reality of our economy. I also understand the reality of policy. I also understand the fiscal the cliff that we truly are on. This is not a made-up subject matter. We have trillions of dollars of debt. It's not going to get better. We do have to look at creative ways to solve problems, but we also need to be able to have a discussion about it without the fringes on either side trying to co-opt the message and make it sound like if we don't do it their way, then we have committed some kind of serial murder, because that doesn't promote any idea that matters. Ryan, stay with us. We've got to take a quick break here. Much more to get to after we take the break. And I want you to notice, we have not once had this question. Was this Mitt Romney's fault? I'm not sure it was. 888-552-3595 if you want to join us. Ryan Frischman, my guest. I'm Tony Trupiano. We'll be back.
This is Chris Mihalakis, president of the Metro Detroit AFL-CIO, wishing all of the listeners of First Shift with Tony Trupiano a happy holidays and a Merry Christmas.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
speed pouring,
drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for,
and much more.
All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan.
Please call 313-962-5020.
Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan. Your future is waiting for you now.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off, than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
The following letters were written by our troops.
My dear fellow Americans, I truly appreciate your support. I was starting to wonder if people had forgotten about us over here, but then one of my buddies showed me this website. And now as tears are streaming down my face, I can see for sure that you haven't. Private Emily B., U.S. Army.
It's so heartwarming to see the American people not letting the men and women of the armed forces be forgotten. Your letters make a group of grown men, battle-hardened and gruff, act like a bunch of kids around a Christmas tree. Thanks. Staff Sergeant Matthew H., U.S. Army.
Your support may be the most important thing our troops can carry with them. But don't take our word for it. Take theirs. To show your support, visit americasupportsyou.mil. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Defense and the Ad Council.
Don't stop. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Whatever happened to good old-fashioned play? As we grow up, being physically active often changes somehow from playing to exercising. Play is fun. Exercise, well, for many of us, that's not fun. And without play, we quit being active, so we get out of shape and start gaining weight. But new reports call on us to be physically active for the sake of our health, so what can we do? At the President's Council on Physical Fitness and Sports, Executive Director Melissa Johnson says it's simple. Get on your walking shoes and go for a walk, or do something else you enjoy.
A lot of sedentary or deconditioned people haven't yet experienced the good feeling of just movement. And once that becomes familiar to them, they don't want to stop.
Federal officials recommend 30 minutes of moderate activity on most, if not all, days of the week as a minimum for good health. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Well, AISI, it was NBD.
You don't know what your kids are saying online or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. Help delete online predators. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Marilyn Olson, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Yo, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Very googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contest.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us. At Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
My guest is Ryan Fishman. Ryan is the Vice President of Strategic Consulting at Steward Media and author of the op-ed, Why Can't Republicans Figure Out How to Win the White House? Ryan, you know, my next question to you is kind of twofold. That's a big question to ask. Why can't they win? But let's start with branding, something you know a little bit about. Obviously, the Republican brand is not what it once was. And when we break down demographics from the election, we know that there are a lot of, and this is not a racial statement, but there are a lot of white men within the Republican Party. But they're not appealing to minorities. They're not appealing to Latinos. They're not appealing to African Americans. We, in fact, a couple weeks ago, had a documentary filmmaker on that did a film called Fear of a Black Republican. And if we had more time, I'd go into that. in greater detail. But let's talk about branding. Is that the first battle, is rebranding the Republican Party?
I think that's certainly a place to start, but you can't just rebrand without actually changing the way that we do business. I think if, and I know one of your questions is going to be, is Mitt Romney to blame? But he's, I don't think he is necessarily for the reason we lost, but I would say one reason we lost is we didn't make that fundamental reach to communities that are minorities where we could have given them a chance at descriptive representation. What I mean by that is, had Mitt Romney gone with Marco Rubio instead of Paul Ryan, he would have made a fundamental step for the Republican Party to show that it's not just about white men, it is about everybody. And here's a young, fresh leader from the state of Florida, a swing state, not like Wisconsin, where he maybe could have garnered some votes. So even as a strategic position, I think it would have made more sense. But ultimately, yes, if you look at the numbers, Mitt Romney didn't do as poorly as John McCain did with women, but it still was a double-digit drop-off from where the president was both 2008 and 2012. The Republicans have to reach out to women. And I can't tell you how many times, even working with a pro-choice Republican running in a Republican primary, six candidates, so like I was the only pro-choice option, we had so much trouble getting crossover voters, particularly women, because they said, I've foreclosed on your entire party. I'm not interested. This could be the greatest leader in the world, but I have no interest in voting for a Republican. It's not going to happen. So we have to get over the hump with women. We certainly have to get over the hump with African Americans, because African Americans and Latinos are our largest growing minorities. And that means instead of saying we're keeping everybody out, we need to, sure, beef up border security, but we also need to reform the immigration process for the people that are already here. And for African Americans, it's not about cutting welfare or cutting Social Security. It's about reconfiguring those programs. So, for example, adding drug tests to them and making sure that the money is going to people who are using it so they can rebuild their families and move forward. You know, the problem is the Republicans say cut, 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 and no new taxes, and those were great strategies in 1985 and 1990, but now we're at a fiscal cliff where if I was a new business, or I shouldn't say new business, if I was an established business and I said, I just want to cut my biggest source of revenue, because that's where the government's money comes from, is taxes, and not have any way to supplant that amount of money, it wouldn't make any sense to anybody fiscally, and that's why I'm surprised Republicans would make that sort of statement today.
How do Republicans deal with the Aikens and Murdochs of the world, where, you know, they are, you know, the Mitt Romney certainly had challenges with what was happening beneath him, and things that were totally out of his control, but when you don't denounce something or you don't walk away from something, as women were continuing to see this spiral out of control where the candidate could have taken control of a conversation and just chose to ignore it. The whole 47% video and how that became its own story. First, we deny it. Then we agree that it was inappropriate. You know, there were a lot of mistakes, but I don't believe that's why the Republicans lost the White House. I do think it's a foundational difference in an ideology that America is just moving beyond it. And Ryan, I've got to ask you. Well, I guess we'll get to that first, and then I've got to ask you about your demographic, because I think your demographic is the demographic the Republican Party is ignoring. But let's start with that. How do you deal with those fringe people like Aiken and Murdoch in your party that make it impossible, as you said, to find that crossover vote?
It's incredibly difficult because there are a lot of people like Todd Aiken out there in the Republican Party. They're not all necessarily elected to office, but they agree with the philosophy, and it's the philosophy that has to change. Obviously, there's a lot of scientists in the world that would say the Republicans don't know what they're talking about on more issues than just legitimate rape, but we have to fix the problem by making it clear at the top that, for example, I mean, I know there are Republicans who are going to fundamentally disagree with this, but for example, that if we were in the White House, we weren't going after Roe v. Wade. You know, we were going to let that battle die. That's certainly what I would suggest. But we have these guys, the Todd Aikens of the world, and even the Paul Ryans. I mean, Paul Ryan in Congress, and I can't defend this in good conscience, did vote and work to shrink the definition of there's the dollars from the government that go to certain abortion cases, and he wanted to shrink that from all cases of rape to only cases of forcible rape. I mean, that's a little difficult to defend once your vice president's on the ticket, and that's why I think we didn't necessarily see Mitt Romney, who, you know, we could debate this all day, but I think the guy was pro-choice before. He's probably still pro-choice now. He sort of had to stick that in the closet to get through the primary, but I just couldn't see where he was going to make any sort of move on abortion because Paul Ryan was so adamantly not only pro-life, but pro-life in circumstances of rape. And seemingly, I would assume, his right-to-life requests in all circumstances because it's God's will.
All right, and we've got very little time left. Let's talk about the demographic you represent. I believe that that's where the Republican Party needs to live. And in many ways, Ryan, I'm going to suggest that your demographic is much more socially liberal. I'm not saying liberal. I said socially liberal. And as a result of that, LGBT issues don't bother you the way they did your fathers and grandfathers, and I could go on and on and on. Do you believe that they need to find a way to attract you and people like you?
Yes, and I don't think it's just young people. I mean, certainly I'm young for a Republican, but it's a lot of businessmen across this country. Particularly you see this in the Jewish faith because we don't put the same, even the Orthodox Jews don't put the highest priority on all circumstances of abortion, for example. But there's a lot of businessmen in this country who don't care about the social issues. They don't want the government to waste their time. They don't want to be taxed to have to deal with it. What they want the government to focus on is, number one, the economy, and number two, national security. So preserving what's going on inside our country and then making a difference outside our country. And I think you would see some of the top guys on the Forbes list in this country who are Republicans say the exact same thing. For me, it's about business first. And that's one of the things I said in my column. Yeah, sure, I voted with my checkbook, and I have Democrat friends. My closest friend would say, you have to vote with your conscience. You have to vote with your heart. Unfortunately, in this election, I didn't make that decision, but I think the Republican Party has to move to a place where it really is the party of small government. And I know you call it socially liberal to be pro-choice and to support gay marriage, but I think that ultimately is even more conservative because we're saying we don't want the government to play a role there.
And I can't disagree that, Ryan. We're just out of time. I have a feeling we'll be visiting again. I can't thank you enough for this conversation to be continued, my friend.
Absolutely.
All right, Ryan Fishman, once again. We've got to get to a break.
This is Reverend D. Alexander Bullock, Rainbow Push Detroit, President and State Coordinator. I'd like to wish the First Shift audience a happy holidays.
Today in the United States, labor is under siege. Unions are being assailed. In states like Wisconsin and Ohio, collective bargaining rights are being stripped away, and so-called right-to-work laws aim to eliminate unions entirely so companies can pay less or outsource jobs completely. As a result, you're being divided, and there's no one place for you to be heard, no one place to speak, no one place to stand together, until now. Welcome to UnionCircle.com, an online community created specifically for union members. A place where 40 million active and retired union members, their friends, family, and supporters all across North America can be counted. UnionCircle.com provides a forum for members to interact and build a powerful voice. Union members can share their thoughts and opinions. Union locals can post news and announcements. People who run for public office and who stand with the unions can spread their message and rally union members. Because united we stand, united we vote. You'll also find union-friendly businesses that offer Circle members exclusive discounts, promotions, special offers, rewards, and coupons, all to help support America's workforce. And all UnionCircle.com members can create a call to action to make a real difference in their city, their jobs, and their lives. UnionCircle.com is the online community for anyone who believes in restoring the middle class and that the strength of this nation is in its workers. It's a website just for you. Will UnionCircle.com replace Facebook? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's tightly integrated with both Facebook and Twitter. But while Facebook and Twitter connect you to family and friends and LinkedIn to professional contacts, UnionCircle.com is specifically designed to connect you with your fellow union members and to keep you plugged into union activity locally and nationally. It is the perfect site for all union members because America's unions have always known that there is power in numbers and strength in unity. Listen, be heard, take action. Now is the time. UnionCircle.com is the place. Get in the circle. UnionCircle.com.
This is Ron Scott. We're moving to 1130 a.m. WDFN. Join us on Sunday, January 6th, and each Sunday at 10 a.m. We will keep fighting for justice on 1130 a.m. WDFN.
Ew, it stinks in here.
Passing gas. Is there a right time and a wrong time to do it?
Come on, huh? I'm trying to eat.
When indoors in the company of others, passing gas is not only taboo, it can be deadly.
I'm gagging.
Passing gas releases a plume of toxic vapors like ammonia and hydrogen cyanide.
Ah, you're killing us over here.
Every year, hundreds of infants exposed to passed gas die.
What? I cracked a window?
And just opening a window isn't enough. These deadly fumes can linger in the room for hours after odors have dissipated.
Daddy, you promised you'd smoke outside.
You're right, Pumpkin. Excuse me.
If you smoke, take it outside. Don't pass gas. A message from the American Legacy Foundation and the Ad Council. Get the facts at don'tpassgas.org.
The following letter was written by Sergeant Leroy P., U.S. Army.
I'm currently on my third tour to Iraq. Never have I ever seen so much love and support from people I don't even know. My mom always told me that there are angels among us. And right now, I really do believe that. Very much.
Your support may be the most important thing our troops can carry with them. To show your support, visit americasupportsyou.mil. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Defense and the Ad Council.
Unions work. Did you know that workers covered by a union contract earn more money each year than non-union workers? And that a contract can put more dollars in your pocket each and every week? A union contract protects your wages, giving your family financial security. Does more money in your pocket sound good? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Stay connected with us. First Shift is on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us, like us, love us. At Tony Trupiano on Twitter and add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today.
Tweet. Joining us now is Subodh Chandra. Subodh is an attorney with the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless who is here to help us work through what happened and why it's important that we have this discussion. Subodh, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for shedding light on the issue. Folks to know.
Well, you know, it's important as we see. I mean, we saw this, Subodh, certainly in many states. We saw it here in Michigan, obviously in Ohio. We saw it in Pennsylvania. We saw it in Indiana, and I could go on in Florida. You know, there's a real problem, and I got to tell you, I received a communication from a listener the day after the election that said we should be embarrassed that we try to uphold ourselves as a beacon of light for the world, and this is the way we treat our voters. And I think that there's some legitimacy to that comment.
There is, and the court recognized that in its opinion. You know, to give you a little bit of background on this, because it's important for folks to understand how we got here, the lawsuit that we're talking about was actually first brought on behalf of the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless in 2006, and other groups as well, and individuals. That was in 2006, and it was originally a challenge to Ohio's voter ID statute, because what the fellow who's now the Secretary of State, John Husted, was then the Speaker of the House, and what they passed was a law that, you know, again, most folks superficially would say, well, okay, why shouldn't we have ID? And you can understand that concept, but the way they wrote the law is they wrote out the poorest of the poor. So if you have a paid form of identification, what we used to call in this country an illegal poll tax, like a state-paid driver's license means you got to have a car, a bank statement in your name means you got to have money, a utility statement in your name means you got to have property. If you had one of those things, you could vote on Election Day. But if you had the one thing that poor people have, which is their Social Security number to prove identity, you couldn't vote on Election Day. It was written out of the statute. So we had a federal consent decree as a result of that case that ordered that poor people would be able to vote provisionally on Election Day and their votes would be counted using the Social Security number. And, of course, the state could then verify their identities by checking those Social Security numbers. That's what the court order was, and that's what Judge Marbley said was violated with Husted's 11th hour decree on the Friday night before the election. He turned the rules around and said that votes would be discarded where voters, where the form, the section of the form he'd created for recording what the ID was somehow incomplete or missing. When state law provides, it's the poll worker's job to do it. So imagine what's really going on here. You have a so-called conservative taking the position that when a government bureaucrat screws up and doesn't do their job, your individual liberty should be sacrificed.
You know,
and doesn't make any sense at all.
It makes no sense at all. And, you know, it kind of goes back to an issue we had here in Michigan. And of course, I did some research on this. Other states had these problems as well. We're having poll workers that are not properly trained. And instead of the secretaries of state taking responsibility for the lack of training or improper training, this tries to put the burden on the voter themselves. And sweet God, Sabote, I mean, how can we ever think that the voter will know right from wrong on these issues when the poll workers don't know what they're doing?
That's right. And some of the evidence that we submitted to the court this last week, and think about this, the election was last Tuesday, and within a matter of days we were able to find evidence that Husted's directive didn't even work because sometimes the poll workers were having the voters fill out that portion of the form as he directed. Sometimes the poll workers were filling it out. Sometimes they were doing a combination where the poll worker would fill out a portion, the voter would fill out a portion. And so you had a kind of chaos going, and clearly some of the poll workers were saying in their sworn testimony that, hey, we didn't know what the rules were. We were confused by the training. So what this is, and because let's take a step back. I mean, folks will listen to the details and say, why does this matter? What matters is that every single one of these tactics that the Secretary of State of Ohio was undertaking over the course of the last several months all had the effect. I can't speak to his intention, but they all had the effect of shaving off a little percentage here, a little percentage there, of the voters that tend to be poorer, which, as we know, statistically, tend to vote for the party that he's not a part of.
Okay, fair enough, and I think that that's an accurate assessment. Let's go back to a moment to Judge Marbley's 17-page ruling. A 17-page, I want to kind of underline and boldface that because for those of us that read it, and we'll get it posted to our Facebook page, and I really do want to encourage people to read it. This judge basically was sending not just a message to Ohio, not just a message to Don Husted, but sending a message to the country that we cannot disenfranchise voters. There are laws that protect these things, and we should honor them.
Absolutely. That was what he was saying. And, you know, Judge Marbley in this case has made it clear at every stage for the last 6 years that he's going to be protective of the right to franchise. He understands the state's interest in trying to protect against potentially fraudulent voting, although there's no record in the there's no evidence in the record whatsoever that that's occurring or has occurred. He understands the state's interest in that, but at the same time, you can't peel off and disenfranchise segments of the electorate.
Well, again, it's one of those, it's certainly, in fact, I found that decision to be so well-written and such common sense, I literally printed a copy and filed it so that I could pull it out from time to time to remind myself how important it is that we continue to fight this good fight. And Sabote Chandra, I would think especially, and I'll ask you to tell us a little bit about the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless, but I would think that advocating on behalf of a community that some of them have is that right to vote. And I mean, that's all some of them have. We need to protect that at all cost.
Well, it was very moving in 2006, and I think one of the reasons we had this consent decree, one of the reasons that the court issued the order, and at that time, then Republican Secretary of State Ken Blackwell and Republican Attorney General Jim Petro entered into it, was because they were going to lose. We had a parade of witnesses in the courtroom ready to testify that they had been able to vote their whole lives, but as a result of that voter ID statute, they suddenly found themselves disenfranchised. And so the order ensured that they would be able to vote and their votes would be counted. You know, you spoke of Judge Marbley's opinion. I'm looking at it right now myself, and there's some extraordinary language in here that I have, you know, rarely seen in a judicial opinion. I mean, the court really calls out the Secretary of State for what's really going on here. He says, quote, "The surreptitious manner in which the Secretary went about implementing this last-minute change to the election rule casts serious doubts on his protestations of good faith." I mean, the court is very pointedly saying, you know, don't sit here and, you know, don't, as the old expression goes, piss on my leg and tell me it's raining. I mean, that is an extraordinary statement by the court, really effectively questioning the intentions of the Secretary of State.
Well, you know, and I'm glad that that happened, but I'm going to tell you why. Whether the Secretary of State were a Republican or a Democrat, here's one thing that office should be. It should be above reproach. It's that office should be about protecting the integrity of every person's right to vote. And when they breach that, as John Houston clearly did, then they need to be called out for it, because this office should be nonpartisan. And not unlike Michigan, clearly it's not. And that's what the judge was saying, in my opinion.
That's right. And one of the things that your listeners should understand is this particular opinion about this particular scheme, which was disenfranchising voters where there might be a technical defect on the form that they fill out on Election Day, is just one of many, many things that the Secretary of State did in connection with the 2012 election that had a suppressive effect. I mean, I'll give you a few examples, and there's just a few of them, that are going to sound absurd to your listeners, but this is what we experienced in Ohio. You all in Michigan probably have early voting.
No, we don't.
You don't? Okay. Well, in Ohio, we do, and we did. And in 2008, it came in increasing demand because of the long lines. People really wanted to vote early and lock their votes in. And so the weekend before the election, thousands of people, particularly in the urban counties where the lines can get long, took advantage of early voting in 2008. What the secretary then did was try to curtail that and end it on the weekend before the election. He was taken to federal court by the Obama campaign. It was ordered that the early voting had to continue and had to proceed. And then, initially, he defied the federal order and said, well, I'm not going to implement that now. I'm going to wait for the appeals. And then the judge said, I want you to in my courtroom next week. And then he caved. But he curtailed the number of hours. So the number of overall early voting hours was much smaller. As a result, fewer people early voted because working folks got to work outside of regular business hours.
Absolutely. Sabo, let me ask you to stay with us. We've got to get to a break, but we'll be right back.
This is U.S. Congressman Gary Peters, and I'd just like to wish all of you and your families the merriest and happiest this holiday season.
On 1310 WDTW.
Hi, Tony Trupiano here. One of my pet projects for 2012 is to get those of you who have yet to register to vote to do just that. If you are connected to the internet, I have made it very easy for you to register. Just go to www.thetonyshow.org, that's www.thetonyshow.org, and click on the Register to Vote button that is prominently displayed on the homepage. Now, there are no excuses, and it only takes a few minutes, and it's free as well. So if you have to register to vote, I am not concerned as to why, but I am concerned if you don't do it now. Again, just go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the button that says Register to Vote right here. We all care about our democracy, but if you are not registered to vote, then no matter how passionate you are, without voting or having the ability to vote, it's honestly just complaining, and we have all had enough of that. Again, go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the Register to Vote button now and register.
First Chip with Tony Trupiano.
In negotiating the deal with the state, the city was told to use Miller Canfield Law Firm. They had Miller Canfield on the state side and Miller Canfield on the city side negotiating this bond deal. Well, Tony, what typically happens when a municipality gets bonds from the MFA, negotiated bonds, they get that money. They get access to that money. But in this case, Tony, in this unique situation, the state said, I don't want the city to have access to its own money. This is the city's money. I'm a Detroit citizen. We're paying taxes, or we're paying interest on that borrowed money right now, $137 million. But Dylan said, I don't want the city to have access to this money. Even the Michigan Finance Authority, Tony, said they didn't have a problem with the city having access to the money. It was Andy Dylan who said, I want them to have to come to me to get permission to use the money.
On 1310 WDTW.
Let's sing that new song.
My music track, track, track from a modem jack, jack, jack plays MP3s, threes, threes, and I download fast, fast, fast. I read the bits, bits, bits on the microchip,
chip, chip, and I burn, burn, burn till my favorite hit, hit, hit.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in technology, but parents can help keep them updated. Go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Today in the United States, labor is under siege. Unions are being assailed. In states like Wisconsin and Ohio, collective bargaining rights are being stripped away, and so-called right-to-work laws aim to eliminate unions entirely so companies can pay less or outsource jobs completely. As a result, you're being divided, and there's no one place for you to be heard, no one place to speak, no one place to stand together. Until now. Welcome to UnionCircle.com, an online community created specifically for union members. A place where 40 million active and retired union members, their friends, family, and supporters all across North America can be counted. UnionCircle.com provides a forum for members to interact and build a powerful voice. Union members can share their thoughts and opinions. Union locals can post news and announcements. People who run for public office and who stand with the unions can spread their message and rally union members. Because united we stand, united we vote. You'll also find union-friendly businesses that offer Circle members exclusive discounts, promotions, special offers, rewards, and coupons, all to help support America's workforce. And all UnionCircle.com members can create a call to action to make a real difference in their city, their jobs, and their lives. UnionCircle.com is the online community for anyone who believes in restoring the middle class and that the strength of this nation is in its workers. It's a website just for you. Will UnionCircle.com replace Facebook? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's tightly integrated with both Facebook and Twitter. But while Facebook and Twitter connect you to family and friends and LinkedIn to professional contacts, UnionCircle.com is specifically designed to connect you with your fellow union members and to keep you plugged into union activity locally and nationally. It is the perfect site for all union members because America's unions have always known that there is power in numbers and strength in unity. Listen. Be heard. Take action. Now is the time. UnionCircle.com is the place. Get in the circle. UnionCircle.com.
My guest once again is Subodh Chandra. He is an attorney with the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless. Before we go any further, Subodh, could you tell us a little bit about the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless?
Sure. The Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless is an organization based in Cleveland that is a member organization, essentially, of people who are homeless and are poor, and it provides services to them, provides counseling, assists them in finding shelter, assist them with issues like this, voting rights issues or other issues in which people's civil rights are being violated. And it's really been at the vanguard, as I said, since 2006 of taking on these issues of voter suppression. And I really give a lot of credit to a shoestring budget organization with community organizers who really try to take care of the poorest of the poor in our community.
No, it's wonderful. It sounds very much like the function of our local Sugar Law Center. And it's good to know that organizations like the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless exist and certainly are advocates for all of us. You know, I preach often, Subodh, on this show that the one thing that we all have in common, whether you're one of the Koch brothers or whether you can't afford to buy a Coke, is we all have a right or should have a right to vote and make sure our vote counts. And that's really, honestly, at the end of the day, the foundation of this story, that's what this is about.
Well, we hold ourselves out to the world as Americans as having a model democracy, as being a place where every voice is heard, and having a representative government. And so what I find shocking, and I shouldn't be shocked anymore because I've now seen many years of these kinds of schemes, but it continues to shock me that there are people who simply want to change the rules of the game and don't want every voice to be heard and don't want every vote to count and are willing to do whatever it takes or is necessary to try to suppress that vote. I'd be ashamed of myself if I lived in the greatest democracy in the world and I kept trying to make it not a democracy, and yet there are people willing to do that.
Well, I said this story before the break. This story is not being done being told, and unfortunately that's true. Your Secretary of State, John Husted, has decided to appeal the judge's ruling, which, by the way, was pretty black and white.
He did, and perhaps he's taking some comfort in that with a three-judge panel in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is removed from the situation, and with the mix of ideology of the various judges there, that perhaps he has a shot at overturning this. But Judge Marbley was very clear in his order, and we put this into our brief that we filed in the middle of the night. He was pretty clear that it was his own consent decree that he was interpreting. It was, and that the law clearly provides that a judge has the discretion to interpret their own order. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. I will never predict the future on these kinds of court rulings. Things bounce around. But Secretary Husted has a record now of losing these issues. Before the break, I was telling you about some of the other things he'd done. I'll give you one other example that's just extraordinary. And every single one of your listeners is going to understand it. Imagine you go in an urban area or a suburban area to a polling location where there are multiple precincts. And you walk up to the table, and your poll worker directs you to the wrong table, to the wrong precinct. This happened to thousands of voters in 2008. It happens all the time in these busy areas. So you get directed to the wrong table. They say you're not on the list, and then they have you vote provisionally. Secretary Husted's position to the courts was that you should be disenfranchised, even though it was the government worker that was responsible for the error. And the Sixth Circuit and Judge Marbley just shut him down on that and said, no, that doesn't make any sense at all to hold the voter accountable for poll worker error. But this is the kind of thing we're talking about.
Well, not to mention the fact that when he goes to appeal, when Secretary Husted goes to appeal this, it's paid for with taxpayer dollars.
It is. And one of the people who should not escape accountability in this, because this discussion has been focused on Secretary Husted, it is the Republican Attorney General of Ohio, Mike DeWine, the former U.S. Senator, who has been working in lockstep with the Secretary of State on this. It's not just the Secretary of State who is defending this case. It is the state of Ohio. And the state of Ohio has been taking the same position in court. And you're absolutely right. Taxpayer resources are being spent in defense of these kinds of unconstitutional actions.
Well, unfortunately, Spode, we have way too much in common. Our Attorney General, also a former member of Congress, not the Senate, working in cahoots with our Secretary of State, who they both happen to be Republican. In fact, yesterday she released a statement that she would not support early voting, but would support no excuse absentee voting as a substitute. And you and I both know it's not a substitute at all.
Well, that's right. And you know, one of the more interesting things about this that I'm sure your listeners will appreciate is, at the end of the day, I think a lot of these efforts backfired. I mean, to the extent that any of these efforts were an effort to try to tilt the playing field by a percentage point or two or more in favor of one political party, the effect that it had in Northeast Ohio, the effect that it had across Ohio, I think as people started hearing about these things, it underscored their determination to vote. And people stood in line for hours, and people made sure that they were voting and fought to have their vote count. What we're fighting over now is the counting of provisional ballots to make sure that votes count. It may not affect the outcome of a presidential election. It may affect the outcome of only, you know, some other races at the state rep level that we have that are very close, or some of the judicial races. It may affect no races at all. But as you keep pointing out, the dignity of every single one of those votes counts and matters.
Yeah, absolutely. And you and I could probably easily spend another hour going through Judge Marbley's decision. You know, one of the things that I picked up on was, and it was actually in one of the articles that I read, it says, Marbley said that the form illegally shifted the responsibility for recording identification information from the provisional ballot application from the poll worker to the voter, which we, of course, talked about. He went on to say throughout the ruling that he criticized the provisional ballot application that Secretary Husted designed for the presidential election, saying, and he questioned whether the poor drafting was, quote, by design or accident. Well, there's an accusation for you, Sabode.
Well, it was an extraordinary statement, along with the observation about the surreptitious manner in which this was done on the Friday night before the election, with the secretary always protesting, oh, you can't have last-minute election changes whenever he's opposing our efforts. So these are some extraordinary observations by the court, really calling out the secretary. And what we hope is that the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals will pay due deference to the judge here, the federal district judge. Sometimes in these kinds of politically charged cases, there's the old adage that lawyers have that bad facts make bad law. We are resting on basic, well-established legal principles, due process, equal protection of the law, a federal judge's right to interpret his own consent decree. That
consent
decree
downstairs.
Was entered into by the parties. I mean, Houston tried to get out of this consent decree earlier this year altogether, eliminating the protections of the consent decree, and he was shut down in that as well. So we hope that the Court of Appeals will adhere to well-established legal principles and not undermine the efforts of the district.
Well, we are just out of time, but I got to tell you, we're going to continue to follow this. Don't be surprised if we don't reach back to you and have this discussion again. I can't thank you enough for your time this morning.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate it. Subodh Chandra. Let's take a quick break here.
Hi, this is Joe DeSano from Main Street Strategies, and I want to wish Tony Trupiano and each and every one of his audience a happy and restful holiday season.
On 1310 WDTW.
Next time you need to stop for groceries, the 42,000 members of the United Food and Commercial Workers in Michigan ask you to shop at one of the stores where they work, including Kroger, Meijer, Hiller's, and Hollywood Markets. Shopping at these union stores helps support good union jobs, which build healthy communities. If you already shop at these stores, our members want to thank you for your support.
When my family found out I was on drugs, they were devastated.
It was killing them, you know, it was killing them. It
tears your family up more than it does you.
You want to stop, you know, in your heart you need to stop.
My mom was just a nervous wreck. I could just see her. She could see her getting older way too fast.
My oldest brother banned me from the house. You're a drug addict. I don't want you around my kids.
I just couldn't help it. I couldn't get a grip on it. I couldn't even stay clean to get my son back.
It doesn't matter if it's Monday at 10 in the morning or if it's Sunday at 2 in the morning. You got to go get drugs or money, one or the other.
You pray to God, please help me quit this, stop this.
My dad was frantic, and he looked at me and he said, we're not going to gamble with your life.
I wanted to have my family back, and that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
This is Detroit's Progressive Talk, 1310 WDTW, Dearborn.